Buckeye Talk. We're going to jump right into things because I'm excited to rip Wisconsin. For no apparent reason, but 5 minutes ago, I got very angry about Wisconsin. We're going to take all your questions. Last week, we did all Joe Burrow. We've been talking a lot about the quarterback stuff, and you guys had sent in questions last week that we didn't get to because we did all quarterback. So this is Buckeye Talk. This is Bill Landis, Tim Bielik, and Doug LaMaurice, and this is about you. If you didn't think it up, we're not going to talk about it, except for the Wisconsin thing. I'm gonna yell about that.
You're just going to make your way through the Big Ten West.
Yeah.
You're up to Iowa, now you're up from Wisconsin. Stay tuned for Purdue next week.
You know why I'm making my way through the Big Ten West? Because they all stink. Carry your weight. We have reviews. You guys can read us on cleveland.com/OSU.
We have farts.
We have... We follow us on Twitter at Tim Bielik, at Bill Landis 25, at Doug LaMaurice. We're going to jump in. We have a really good Ohio State-Michigan question off the top, which will lead into me ripping Wisconsin. And then we're going to get to a lot of different things about Ohio State football. But actually, I do have a thing I want us to do very quickly before we get to the review and your questions. A couple weeks ago, there was some reaction. When we did the post Spring Game podcast, and we said, like, Dwayne Haskins has won the job. How could you not pick Dwayne Haskins? We got pushback from some people, I think, who thought, you guys love Dwayne Haskins. Why don't you give Joe Burrow a chance? Then last week we did Joe Burrow left, and we got some pushback from people who were like, my God, he's not Tom Brady. Relax a little bit. Why are you acting like this is the greatest? Listen.
Although you did say he was Tom Brady.
I said he looked like Tom Brady. If I said that you look like young Han Solo, I'm not saying you are young Han Solo. I'm not saying you own the Millennium Falcon and you hang out with a Wookiee. I'm saying you look like young Han Solo.
I do one of those things.
The young Han Solo thing, by the way, I don't know who that guy is, who the actor is playing young Han Solo. I hate him from the commercials already.
I don't like him. I don't like his Harrison Ford impression.
He has none of Harrison Ford's charisma. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I'm excited that Donald Glover is playing Lando. That's cool. I'd watch a Lando movie.
Well, I know. I hope it is a Lando movie. I hope. I'm rooting. I know. Spoiler alert. I mean, like, spoiler alert. Han Solo doesn't die in Young Han Solo because he has to go do a bunch of whole old Han Solo stuff. Yeah. I'm hoping he does die because that guy annoys. What's he been in? Has he been in anything? Is he a hot young actor? What's his name?
I think the people who are making these movies, aren't they intentionally picking people that aren't good
actors?
Well, maybe.
Or charismatic?
Name brands and household names.
Awful. Other than Donald Glover. I'm sure there's a bunch of 40-year-old people saying, like, that's not the Star Wars I grew up on.
Well, yeah. What if Han Solo dies in this movie and you find out that every Han Solo after that was a robot?
Oh, boy. Let's not open the robot can this early.
I just saw an advertisement for a video game that's supposed to be like, I'm a robot. Feel bad for me. I'm going to go kill all the humans. And again, it's like, what are you trying to do? Who are you appealing to? What's the guy's name? Alden Ehrenreich. Is that a person? What's he been in?
Born in 1989?
He's not a real person. I think he might. I have no interest in that guy. He's going to ruin Donald Glover's movie. I'm mad at him already. Thanks, Alden. You bland. God, he's so bland. Look at him. He doesn't even look like Han Solo. His face is like a frying pan.
He looks like Harry Styles.
Harry Styles would have been 1,000 times better than this guy. This guy is a dolt. Let's get him on the podcast. So can we have a final official take from all of us about what we truly think about Dwayne Haskins and Joe Burrow? And then it's over because Joe Burrow is gone. Good luck to him. Obviously, when he lands somewhere, we'll talk about that again someday. But just so people know, if for anyone who thought we loved Dwayne Haskins and we're discounting Joe Burrow, and then people who thought that we loved Joe Burrow and were acting like it was the greatest loss in Ohio State history, Bill Landis, what is your official 20-second wrap-up of a Joe Burrow, Dwayne Haskins opinion?
I think they're both good. I've always thought they're both good. I think Dwayne Haskins is a little better and, like, potentially way better. I'm not saying that's a definite, but I think Haskins has a little more upside. Doesn't mean I think Joe's a bad quarterback, and doesn't mean I don't think he'll be good wherever he goes. And I think he would have been good at Ohio State. But I think, like, for Ohio State's offense to take a jump kind of to the next level that, frankly, I think you need to win a national championship now, I think Haskins was the right choice.
Tim.
I'm pretty much in agreement with Bill. I think Haskins has the higher upside, Burrow's still a quality quarterback. Wherever he starts, I think he'll do very well. But again, if I'm Ohio State, you know, if I'm an Ohio State fan, I have to be excited. You'd have to be excited with Haskins' upside and his ability with his arm talent that Ohio State hasn't had a quarterback in such a long time.
I think Joe Burrow will be good. I think it was an obvious choice to pick Dwayne Haskins. I think Joe Burrow can make your program good. I think Dwayne Haskins can make it great. I think there just wasn't a choice to make that you can't turn your back on a guy with the natural arm talent of Dwayne Haskins. They're going to have to make some adjustment, and we'll talk about the thing you wrote off what Urban Meyer said. But I don't know that – I don't think Joe Burrow is a national championship quarterback. And I don't think he's going to lead any of these teams that he's going to a national championship. I think he has a very good chance to make those programs better than they are. I think Dwayne Haskins is a very possibly a national championship quarterback. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tim.
Yes.
Are we calling it the fart? That's why you said that. I got confused.
I'm calling it the fart.
You're calling it the fart. I thought you meant someone farted.
No, Kyle Brandenburg tweeted at us on May 8th. Was it last week, right? He said, name for the five-star review segment, the five-star appreciation reviews from today, or fart.
So are we calling it that?
You guys can call it whatever you want. I'm calling it fart.
Okay.
I think we're all just going to have three separate names for it. When I find a name, I like that's what I'm going to call it. You can call it, keep calling it fart, Bill, and Doug can call it whatever he wants.
In the meantime, Tim, go ahead and rip a fart.
All right.
You set that up pretty well. Kyle Brandenburg with the set, Bill Landis with the spike.
All right, well, this is review/food question from Schultz 99999999.
There's 99. Nine
nines? Yeah. I don't know, Schultz, why you have 99s in your name, but okay. You got me to read all nines, so congratulations. He says, I thoroughly enjoyed Doug, Bill, and Tim keeping me up to date and current on my Buckeye football nerd knowledge. Also, last year's away jerseys in Michigan inspired me to make Buckeyes with white chocolate. Thoughts?
Oh.
Respect.
We had like a thing about how I think white chocolate's gross. And
yes. And we both.
Peanut butter cups with white chocolate are stupid.
Yes.
I had a peanut butter cup with white chocolate the other day. Not terrible.
He's on the bandwagon, folks.
Well, it's like a crazy.
I think it's the only thing that good to come out of those alternate Michigan jerseys if someone made white chocolate out of them. Because otherwise they should wear their normal jerseys versus Michigan.
Yeah, those uniforms are cool, though.
I know, but they should be worn another day.
I agree.
Well, that's a good review.
We also have one where he said, Victor Factor also says, questionable sports takes coupled with even more questionable food takes. I mean, who thinks bread is the most important part of a dish?
Wow.
Still, this is probably the best podcast ever recorded in a car outside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center.
I don't like that person.
Great source for Ohio State football, especially living in Florida. He titled it The Robots.
Oh, well, it is in Florida. Bread doesn't exist in Florida.
He started it by saying the robots are taking over. So that, nice. Those are our two farts of the week.
All right, just quickly on the robots. Everybody saw the jogging robot?
Yeah.
Again, thank you to the 12 Buckeye Talk listeners who, as soon as, whenever that Boston Dynamics, who I think is the name of the company that puts out the robot videos every now and then, the second they are up, I get 12 tweets. I'm like, here's another robot that's going to kill you. Why? Who needs – just a quick thing, and we have to get to football. How does it help humanity for a robot to jog?
They can fight in wars instead of humans. But the problem is then you lose control.
Yeah.
And then you become subjugated.
And they fight against humans.
Or – if it's UPS and you have a robot in the back of the truck and he runs to drop off your package, it saves the driver about 2 minutes.
Takes his job away. That's what it does. Yeah. Here's my question. To all the scientists out there who are dedicating their lives to making robots jog, find something better to do with your vast knowledge. Cure a disease. Invent a new crop. Don't make a robot jog just to get your jollies off, and in the meantime, threaten the existence of the human race. Find some better way to use your brain. Okay.
Make it so I can't lose my cell signal for 5 seconds while I'm driving.
Much better use. Much better use than robot jogging. Tim, get to the Drizzy question. Drizzy sent this question a while ago, right? This is our guy, Drizzy, who enjoys getting busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sent this last week. We obviously didn't get to it with the Joe Burrow talk, but I thought this was fascinating, so I bookmarked this for myself. He asks, What is more likely to happen? Michigan wins 9 games or Ohio State makes the playoff? If Michigan gets to 9, who do they beat slash lose to? I have Michigan at 8. And I think this opens up the topic that we haven't discussed yet, and that's Shea Patterson being eligible to play right away in Michigan. So he also
What do you think of that?
That's massive. I mean, I don't know if you can understate how important it was for Michigan, because we talked about it after the Ohio State-Michigan game last year. If John O'Korn is average, Michigan probably wins that football game, but he was terrible. They had problems at quarterback last year. I think it was like 10 touchdowns combined to like 9 interceptions for all 3 quarterbacks that Michigan had last season.
A jogging robot at quarterback might have beaten Ohio State last year for Michigan. They were awful. And to go... And they've been no better than average at that position in Jim Harbaugh's tenure there.
Yeah.
So to go from average to... Because the question is not... Like, Shea Patterson might be great. There people are throwing out names for, like, the 2019 draft. There's this Justin Herbert guy from Oregon, I think, is it that people are big on. Shea Patterson's in that mix of guys that... It's a five-star guy who's had some success. So I think like there's a debate of like, will he be great? Maybe he won't be great. But I don't know that there's a debate at all over he will be the best quarterback Jim Harbaugh has played at Michigan. Is there even a – like is it possible that Wilton Spate or Jake Rudock in their incarnations would be better than what Shea Patterson's going to give them?
I mean, possibly Brandon Peters, who was the starter at the end of last year before he got hurt against Wisconsin. I think that's possible that Peters might be better. If that's true, then Peters will beat Patterson out in the summer, in August.
So the quarterback play. But I think Ohio State fans, and again, we're assuming most of this audience is Ohio State fans. If you're a Michigan fan listening,
so
welcome. But for Ohio State fans, I think you need to understand that Jim Harbaugh, as a guy who is like a respected coach of quarterbacks, is a quarterback. Has not had quarterbacks. That's the thing everybody thought he was going to do at Michigan, is get quarterbacks, recruit, develop quarterbacks. And he hasn't done that. And if this is that is a big difference. And so I think that needs to permeate everything that Ohio State fans think about Michigan this year, is the idea of, oh, they might have a quarterback now. And that's not a world that Michigan has lived in the Harbaugh era yet.
Actually, I was technically sort of wrong about quarterback stats. It was 9 touchdowns to 10 interceptions last season.
Awful.
It's pretty bad.
Incompetent. Incompetent quarterback play. Which, again, is on a lot of that's on Harbaugh. They had some bad luck with injuries, but a lot of that's on Harbaugh. You know, So when you look at that, who said 8? The question, did Drizzy says he has Michigan at 8?
Drizzy has him at 8.
I would bet, I don't know what Drizzy wants to bet. Ask Drizzy what do you want to bet? I'll bet you that Michigan wins more than 8. And I guess we're talking regular season. They will be better than 8-4.
Yes.
They've won 10, 10, and 8. Most of that time with like a borderline dysfunctional offense.
Yep.
And I think their offense is going to be pretty good this year. And their defense, they lost 2 defensive starters, right? And I think Don Brown might be the best defensive coach in college football.
They lost. Hurst is a big loss.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying they lost good players. Yeah.
But they have Rashawn Gary back. Gary,
they have Chase Winovich back. Devin Bush is back. Yeah. Kalik Hudson is back.
Yeah. So their defense is going to be really good. Their defense has been really good, I think, since Harbaugh got there, and certainly since Don Brown took over. But if they won 10, 10, and 8, and obviously there's one bowl win mixed in one of those 10-win seasons, I think they get to 8 or 9 like kind of easily with the assumption that their quarterback position is at least functional this year. Even if Shea Patterson's not great, I still think they win 9 games.
And here's the thing that, again, Ohio State fans need to remember. If you're not careful in the way that you think about Michigan, you can allow 2 inches to give your impression of Michigan a 180-degree turn. And that if JT Barrett had been marked short, you would respect Michigan right now and be a little worried about Michigan. And that JT Barrett got the first down makes you think Michigan sucks. It's 2 inches. And I'm not like saying that the spot was bad or anything. I'm just saying, don't let 2 inches lull you into some kind of belief that Michigan's program sucks, because it doesn't. And I wrote at the time, 2 years ago, that team that almost beat them, and if they had beaten Ohio State that day, would have gone to the Big Ten championship game, and that season would have ended very differently for Michigan. That was the year. That was their big veteran year. Then they lost everybody. They lost everybody. Last year's Michigan team should be the worst you'll see, because that was a team that had no experience. It's Harbaugh's third year, so like his guys, like the Rashawn Gary class is still sophomores. They're still young. They're still on their way up. That may be the worst Michigan team you'll ever see. Do not believe that that 8-4 Michigan team is representative of what Michigan is. So now what they are is experienced, because we just said they only lost 2 starters on defense. They only lost 5 starters on offense. They're experienced, and they're going to have the best quarterback play they've had.
And they're also going to have the best offensive line coaching they've had with Ed Warner there. Which I think Caron Higdon's back too, right? They're starting running back.
Yeah, Higdon's back. Rusher. I believe Chris Evans is also back.
Yeah, I think they have real, and then we talked about the receivers, right? Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black. Well, like, they have really good offensive skill.
Best skill.
Yeah.
They've had, probably, right?
Yeah, and I think, like, offensive line, in addition to quarterback, has been a real issue for them, and they lose 2 starters on the offensive line. But we all know from following Ohio State since Urban Meyer got here how good of an offensive line coach Ed Warner is. He's not calling the plays; he's just coaching the offensive line, and he's really good at that. He might be the best in the country at that, and I think that's not a small thing. That makes Michigan, I think, a much more dangerous team next year.
And I think if you talk to people who cover Michigan or Michigan fans, they would tell you that the quarterback issues got a lot of attention from people like us who are on the outside and don't cover Michigan on a daily basis. But the people who are around it all the time would tell you that the offensive line was non-functional for many times in this Harbaugh era. Absolutely non-functional. And again, I think they have the – and they won 10-10-8 with at times non-functional offensive lines. And I think they have the ability to make a big jump there, as you said. And they have the best skill. I think it may finally be the time where we see what a Jim Harbaugh offense at Michigan really looks like.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I also think, like, I feel like whenever – and we talk about Michigan a lot, probably more than anyone else who covers Ohio State. And when we do, I think people get angry because I feel like they feel like we're just, like, putting them on watch. Like, Ohio State's going to lose this year to Michigan. That's not really what we're saying. But I think what we're saying, like, the question of whether or not they can win 8 games to me is, like, almost insulting. I think how good Michigan could potentially be. We're not sitting here in May telling you, like, look out, the end of November, Ohio State's going to lose to Michigan finally. I don't think any of us think that right now. We'll see when the season plays out. But to think of Michigan as a team that's going to, like, try to scrape to get to 8 wins to me, I think is a little low when you're projecting them for next year.
And it's just, I mean, we're just trying to, we're like giving you a little warning. You know, we just want you, to have a realistic opinion both of your team, which is we try to talk realistically about Ohio State on every one of these podcasts, but I think you need to have a realistic opinion of your main rival, the team that you care about next, the next most in your life. If you're an Ohio State fan, you care about Michigan next because you hate them. And they lost 5 games last year. They lost 14-10 to Michigan State. They got blown off the field by a really good Penn State team that was out for revenge, right? And that was at Penn State. They lost to a Wisconsin team that, again, like, Wisconsin was undefeated when they beat Michigan.
And lost their starting quarterback that game.
And then they battled with Ohio State, and then they lost their bowl game. So they lost their last 3, but this was a team that along the way, you know, they were 8-2 at one point. And then they lost to Wisconsin, Ohio State, and then their bowl game to South Carolina to end the year. So, and that was like, I mean, there's just no question. The 2018 Michigan team will be better than the 2017 Michigan team. And 2017 Michigan was 8-2 at one point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, to say I have Michigan at 8, Driz, we love you. Driz, come on. We love you. But I just don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's a realistic assessment of a veteran team that Shea Patterson was the number one quarterback in the recruit in the country, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Out of high school?
Top 5 national player, yeah.
That's who you're talking about here. So, just like with robots, be alert. That's all. Be alert. Tim, are you predicting Michigan will beat Ohio State? Is that what you just said?
No.
Tim, you said, you said what? 84% chance that Michigan beats Ohio State? Wow. I'm not sure I would go there, but that's Tim Bielek for you.
I do think, though, like, if the question was, like, give Warren any can win eight, they can win eight games, we should talk about the schedule, like, briefly.
Okay, let's play the schedule game.
Okay. Open at Notre Dame.
Win. Now, Notre Dame's a top 15 preseason team.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be ranked very close to each other going into that game. That'll probably be, like, number 12 against number 14 or something, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to look. Yeah, like, Notre Dame loses a lot on offense, including two first-round offensive linemen. Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey both won the first round, right?
Yeah, both in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, running back's gone. Lost some receivers. Like, I don't know. It just seems like the game to me that, like, everyone thinks Michigan might go in there and get rolled because it's at Notre Dame, and then Michigan wins and everyone gets their ears perked up a little bit on Michigan.
USA Today, very early preseason rankings from May 1st. Michigan 13, Notre Dame 16. Just as a point of reference.
Okay, after that, Western Michigan is win. SMU.
Win.
Home against Nebraska.
Win. Unless Joe Burrow's there, then Joe Burrow will lead Nebraska. I'm just kidding.
At Northwestern.
Win.
Maryland at home.
6-0. Win.
Okay, Wisconsin at home.
Wisconsin's a fraud! And Michigan will be out for revenge.
So that's 7-0.
7-0.
At Michigan State.
I
think Michigan State wins that game.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems like D'Antonio's had Harbaugh's number. I mean, the game last year in Ann Arbor, Michigan State probably had no business winning that game.
Michigan State, another team with, like, everybody back.
Exactly.
But let me ask you this. Michigan State in the USA Today way early rankings are not there.
No, you passed them. They were
Michigan,
I think
State's
they're
10 15, on SI.
They're 15. Yeah, you, 15. You passed them.
Michigan 13, Michigan State 15, Notre Dame 16. Listen, here's the thing, though. Do you believe this statement to be true? Well, will you believe this? When Ohio State and Michigan State are both very good, who has more talent?
When Ohio State and Michigan State are
very good? When Ohio State and Michigan State are both very good, who has more talent?
Ohio State.
Like, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, I mean, Michigan State's beaten very good Ohio State teams. We've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But as you assess the game, you go in and say, well, Ohio State has more talent, so maybe Michigan State would do this to overcome that.
Yeah.
When Michigan and Michigan State are both good, who has more talent?
Michigan.
Should be Michigan.
Yeah.
Should be Michigan, right? I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. It's Michigan, yeah.
So, you know, there's the whole big, I mean, there's the thing, as you said, they've had their number or whatever. But again, if this is Michigan at its best, if this is the best Michigan team that we've seen, I mean, they obviously can win that game.
Sure. 8-0. It's in East Lansing, so you have them 8-0. Then a bye, home against Penn State.
Win.
Win for Michigan?
Coming off a bye, 2 weeks to prepare, and a revenge game.
That helps. I mean, like, and you just don't know. You assume, I don't, Penn State's not going anywhere just because they lost Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know that Penn State's top five team, right?
I think probably not.
Yeah, I got questions outside of McSorley. I mean, they lost so many guys off that team.
Penn State number 9 in the USA Today preseason
rankings. Sports Illustrated 2018. Okay, so you both say win. I'll say win because I think they'll win one of those games. So you guys have them currently undefeated.
No, I had them. I think I had them losing to Michigan State.
Okay, you have them undefeated.
What are they? 9-0.
You're 9-0. Tim and I are both 8-1.
Okay.
At Rutgers,
win. No, wait. You know, for all we know, I say win.
Hashtag for all we know.
Okay,
win.
So you're at 10 wins. Tim and I are at 9 wins. Indiana.
Win.
You're at 11 wins. Tim and I are at 10 wins, and then the Ohio State game.
All right, I'm calling. They're both going to be undefeated going into that game.
Okay.
11-0 versus 11-0, Ohio State, Michigan. Write it down. Whatever day it is that you're listening to this, and I hope it's the first day it's out. I hope it's today, which is May 16th. Write it down. 11-0 versus 11-0.
Don't just write it down. Chisel it into your wall.
Get a tattoo on your arm. 11-0 versus 11-0.
Okay.
Sorry, Driz.
I like that. It was a really good question.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a very good question. So, if the restate the actual question, Tim.
He asks, what is more likely to happen, Michigan to win 9 games or Ohio State to make the playoff?
So then, like, my answer, no doubt about it, is more likely is Michigan to win 9 games. Because, what'd you say, for what? Ohio State to what?
To make the playoff.
Oh, again. No, I thought you said to win. I thought he said to win the playoff. Oh, to make the playoff? Really hard. It's a really hard question. I still say Michigan. Because, like, Michigan... Like, if Ohio State's, if that's an 11-0 versus 11-0 game and Ohio State loses Michigan, they might not make the playoff. So, like, I would say, yeah. And this is coming from a person who we all predicted Ohio State to win the national championship. Like, I'm pretty sure Ohio State's going to make the playoff. I'm 100% sure Michigan's going to win at least 9 games.
Yeah. On paper alone, on defensive talent alone, they should win 9 games. That's how good I think their defense is.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're both likely, but if I'm placing a bet, I'm placing a bet on Michigan to win.
And you could place a bet on that.
I could. Oh, yeah. That's right.
I'm turning my basement into a sports book. Did I tell you that?
No.
Okay. So do we want to talk for 5 minutes about gambling and college sports? Or do we or not? To be honest, I did a whole interview with like a sports gambling guy that's going to be one of the next Takes by the Lake podcasts. So if you are interested in the legalization of sports gambling and what that means for Ohio. Listen to my other podcast, Takes by the Lake. Subscribe to that separately. Do we want to do 5 minutes on like college football and sports gambling, or do we just want to talk about food and the Buckeyes?
I mean, to be totally honest, it's a world that I do not know much about, but I am happy to listen to you guys talk about it if you want to. or if you want to share some of the stuff, you want to preview Takes by the Lake.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to go, I think.
Up next on Takes by the Lake, here's the main question I have about it as it relates to college sports is, should states consider limiting betting on in-state colleges? That if sports gambling is going to be legal in the state of Ohio and run by the state, or that they, not run by the state, but that they license entities, and then here we have gambling. Is there any caveat to that? Should it be that you can bet on everything, but you can't bet on sports played by Ohio State, Cincinnati, Kent State, Akron, Toledo, anybody like that? And the whole thing about this is it's state by state. It's your own individual decision. Should that be something? And like I asked the guy I talked to about that, and he was like, no, of course not.
Yeah.
He did possibly suggest the idea of limiting the amount of an individual bet that you can place on those games so that you can't bet more than, say, $500 on a college game in your state, maybe played in your state or played by a team from your state, so that the idea is you're not trying to make it easy and enticing for anybody associated with the programs to try to make big money off of this.
Yeah.
Do you just allow it? And then I'm sure that, I mean, the NCAA has rules about like, they can't even do like office pools. Rick Neuheisel got in trouble when he was the college football coach for doing a Final Four pool. They're very strict about that. They're not going to change. I'm sure they're not. They're not going to change their rules about that. I don't think. You're certainly, and just like any other sport, you're certainly not going to be allowed to bet on your own team in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so I'm very curious. I asked Ohio State if they wanted to have talk about this, if they had anyone I could talk to about it. They said, we don't have anything to say at this point in time. I'm very interested in, like, would Ohio State as a university make a rule that, for instance, no one employed by the university may bet on an Ohio State athletic event, even though it's legal? If you're a professor, if you work in the cafeteria, if you work in the bookstore, if you work in human resources, if we find out that you made a legal bet on an Ohio State sporting event, you're fired.
I don't even know how you would police that.
I mean, I don't know how you would police it either, unless you just tell people that's the rule.
Yeah.
Break it at your own risk, but you know it. You're not allowed to do it. And then, like, if someone's like, well, I'm not going to risk my job to bet $20 on Ohio State, Michigan, right? Like, would that be something the university would be interested in? Certainly they're going to make sure, you know, the players and the coaches and anybody associated with the actual team can't do it. I'm curious how far they would extend it. there's some, I think, a question right now about what the gambling thing will look like. Will you go into like a betting parlor down the street? Will you be able to do it online or on your phone?
Yeah.
I was wondering, would they possibly do anything where they like shut off access?
If you're in a stadium?
In the stadium or on campus?
Yeah.
Or if you're on...
I think it's worth explaining the thing about Nevada. Like, you can do that.
So in Nevada, like the sports book, you all can get an app on your phone. And so like you just open an account and put money in it or put your credit card on it. And the guy I was talking to said like the vast amount of sports betting in Nevada, where it's been legal for ages, is now done on people's phones. They don't go into a sports book. They don't walk up to a window and hand over a $20 bill and make a bet. They do it on their phone. But that website, that app, doesn't work outside the state lines of Nevada.
Right.
So you could limit it like that, but could Ohio State say, we're shutting that down. We don't even want, would Ohio State be okay with their students betting? Because I'm in class with somebody on the football team and somebody on the football team said, yeah, nobody knows it, but one of our running backs is hurt this week. And then that student runs off and makes a bet on the game. You just want to, and I'm not trying to imply nefarious motives to anybody associated with the football program. I'm just trying to think of real world things.
I mean, it can even be as simple as I guess we could hang out on campus if we wanted to, but we don't. And it's very possible you see an Ohio State player like with a walking boot.
Yep.
And then that's not the player telling you anything other than you using your own eyes to see that guy's injured. And then you place a bet with that information.
And I know, obviously, that can happen right now. That very well may happen somewhere in the world, somewhere in America, around sports teams, in which betting lines are offered in Nevada or by offshore betting sites, that there are people with inside knowledge in or around teams who use that knowledge to make bets.
Yep.
I'm sure that's happening on some level somewhere. But now it's legal and down the street. And does that change anything about it? Like, I'm very curious, because one thing, would the state limit it? Would Ohio say, listen, we're just not going to let you bet on Ohio State? Or would it be like, listen, it's legal. What can we do? It's legal.
Yeah,
it's up to the university, if it wants to limit it. And I would bet Ohio State would do something.
Ohio State might, but I can't see it as being a universal thing. I'm sure the NCAA will do whatever it can to like try to persuade states to make it a thing, but that's not going to work. And I can't imagine a world where like West Virginia is one of the states that's like ready to go, like when this, right?
Yes.
You're going to tell people in West Virginia that doesn't have any professional sports teams that you can't bet on the University of West Virginia football game? Or in Nebraska? Or like Alabama, yeah. I don't think has it. But like states where like the college football team is the only thing that matters,
right.
You can't bet on that team?
So, and I guess that's sort of what that guy said, because that's sort of the whole fun of it.
Yeah.
I put $20 on the team I love. So, so I guess what maybe you would do is you would limit the amount so that you don't knock out the fun of the recreational gambler, who the thing they would get out of it the most is a fun bet on the team they follow. So I guess that makes sense. I can see why you wouldn't just say, no, you were not allowing it. But I think the state may limit the amount, and I think the universities may be very interested in limiting not only, of course, the coaches and the players and anyone around employed by the team. Of course they can't bet. But I just wonder about students and professors and administrators, that it's a legal thing. It's legal. Yeah. But are you going to let – if you just make a rule, I don't know. I'm very – I wish Ohio State would talk to me about it. I'm very curious about it. I think it's very interesting. And like I'm mostly for like you should kind of be able to do with you should kind of be able to do what you want as long as you're not hurting anybody. But there's like the temptation thing there of like if you're just like for the good of everybody associated with it, and even the perception of it is like limit it, hardcore limit it, and say if you get a paycheck from Ohio State, you may not bet on Ohio State. And if we find – doesn't mean we're going to be following you to the sports book, but if we find out that you do, you're fired. I'm not sure that would be unreasonable. And if you don't and if you want to bet – and if you work for Ohio State, you can bet on the Browns.
Yeah.
You can bet on Alabama, Auburn. You cannot bet on Ohio State. And if you want to bet on Ohio State, go get another job.
And I would imagine that those rules would, like, if you're an employee of an NBA franchise, I doubt you'd be able to bet on that franchise. And then you're talking about, like, students are obviously not employees, but everyone's an employee of Ohio State. It's kind of like you're part of the organization, I guess.
It's just different because, like, yeah, the Cavs are the Cavs, and the Browns are the Browns. But we're not talking about Ohio State football. We're talking about Ohio State,
right,
which obviously extends. Someone who works in human resources in the business school has nothing to do with the football team.
Yeah.
But they're employed by Ohio State when you extend it to them. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. Yeah. Should we do other questions?
You didn't brook Wisconsin yet.
What did I say that I was so mad about? What was the thing?
Yeah,
you're mad that they're like
trendy
like playoff.
Ah, ridiculous! So this list, whose list is this? I'm going to have it. Let's get him on the podcast. Paul Meyerberg in his top 25 from May. Clemson 1, Alabama 2, Wisconsin 3, Washington 4, Ohio State 5. This is the age-old saying of just because you have people back doesn't mean you want them all back. So here's the thing. I'm not criticizing. Am I here to criticize Wisconsin? Actually, yes, I am.
Yep.
They didn't play anybody last year. They went undefeated during a regular season against no one.
Except for the Michigan team we just kind of said was decent last year.
But they were decent last year. We also said they didn't have a quarterback or an offensive line.
Correct.
So they did that, and then they beat an Ohio State team that Ohio State was basically in control most of that game. Wisconsin came back. Also, Ohio State's quarterback.
They didn't beat Ohio State.
I mean, they played with an Ohio State team. They lost to Ohio State. Ohio State was in control much of the game, but Wisconsin did make it like a 3-point game in the fourth quarter or whatever. Of note, in that game, Ohio State's quarterback probably should have been in the hospital, but was not. And then you went and beat a Miami team that Miami also had overachieved all year. I'm just telling you that the West, the Big Ten West, no offense, is a bunch of frauds. And so that's fine. I'm not disparaging Wisconsin. I'm just saying that Wisconsin is a fraud. No, but I'm not. I love Paul Christ.
Yep.
Love him.
Camp counselor, Paul Christ.
Love him.
Vacation Bible study, camp counselor, Paul Christ.
NPR host, Paul Christ.
Yep.
Walks around in the woods of Wisconsin and puts out forest fires. Love him. I just think when you have a list, and the list goes Clemson, Alabama, Wisconsin. Why is Washington 4? Washington, Ohio State.
Noodle arm Jake Browning.
So Wisconsin has everybody back, and Ohio State lost Jerome Baker and is going to replace him with Baron Browning, and Ohio State lost Sam Hubbard and is going to replace him with Chase Young, and Ohio State lost, who else did they lose? Tyquan Lewis and Ohio State lost Denzel Ward, is going to replace him with Jeffrey Okuda, and like we're going to like try and pretend there's some world where it's like, well, Wisconsin has everybody back. Do they have Jeffrey Okuda? Do you have a Jeffrey Okuda? Show me Wisconsin's Chase Young, and then I'll put you in the preseason top 5.
I'm going to put them in the top 5 of my AP preseason poll just to make you angry.
Jonathan Taylor, last year, Tim, double-check this. In the Big Ten championship game, Jonathan Taylor rushed for 4,000 yards during the regular season, and in the Big Ten championship game, he rushed 61 times for 19 yards. Is that correct? That's the right number, is it not?
You're close. 15 times for 41 yards.
Oh, I actually was really close. That Jonathan Taylor, who during the rest of the season looked like a Heisman candidate. No offense to Antonio Williams, as we said in a previous podcast, he's Antonio Williams. Antonio Williams couldn't get on the field at Ohio State and had to transfer to North Carolina. Do not give me, who would you rather have? Let's play the who would you rather have game. How many starts does Alex Hornibrook have as a Big Ten quarterback? 2 years worth, right?
He's like 24 starts. He started every game last year, and I think he started most of the games the year before that.
20?
Split a little bit.
20? 20.
20-ish.
How many does Dwayne Haskins have?
Zero.
Zero? Who do you want?
Take Martell. No, Haskins.
Haskins.
Although I used to call Hornibrook Noodle Arm, and I have backed off that.
Don't back off!
No, I backed off it last year. He got a little better.
I loved when you called him Noodle Arm.
Yeah. I will say Alex Hornibrook is a pretty darn good country singer.
He's actually not, though. I thought that was a terrible rendition of a Zach Brown.
I thought it was really? At least decent.
I mean, props to him for getting up in front of people and singing, because I would never do that. But just because you do it doesn't mean you're good at it.
Also, that also applies to playing quarterback. Because yeah. Here's the thing, and do I want to rip Wisconsin? Do I want to disparage Wisconsin? Yes, I do. But no, I don't. I don't, because, of course, is Wisconsin...
23 starts.
23 career starts. Is Wisconsin a top 15 team for the preseason? Absolutely. Of course they are. Please don't rank them ahead of Ohio State and right behind Alabama. Please don't. Please don't. Don't embarrass yourself. Bill, I'm talking to you and your future ballot. Don't just be a realistic person, because they're going to lose. You know how they won all those games last year and they beat everybody? Like, they're going to lose this year. They're going to lose one of those games, because you don't just go undefeated in back-to-back regular seasons, no matter how lousy your division is. And their division's pretty lousy. And so don't. If Wisconsin had been in the East last year and had also, they played Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else did they play from the East last year?
I got to pull up the schedule. They played Maryland and Indiana.
Oh, they did? Oh, they played Maryland. Oh, they played Maryland and Indiana?
This year, they play at Michigan.
Okay.
Home against Rutgers.
Okay.
At Penn State.
Okay. So, last year they played Maryland, Indiana, and they got Michigan at home.
Mm-hmm.
And this year they play at Michigan and at Penn State.
Yep.
And a human person put them number 3 in the preseason poll. If Wisconsin was in the East last year, would they have gone undefeated? If they had played Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State last year, would they have gone undefeated?
I think no.
Why are we living in a fantasy world? Why are we living in a fantasy world where you bring back everybody from a team that went 12-0 in a terrible division, and we're going to pretend they're the third best team in America? Don't do that to yourself. Michigan's going to win more games than Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to lose to Penn State. They're going to lose to Michigan. They're going to lose both those road games. Who's their non-conference? San Diego State? BYU? Yeah, Hawaii?
BYU. Who is it? It's Western Kentucky, New Mexico, and then BYU.
Oh! Wow! Way to test yourself. Western Kentucky's going to beat them. Wisconsin's going 6-6. And if you don't like it, you can mail this podcast to Paul Crist, and he and Brian Ferentz can come on together. But don't put Wisconsin third in the country and point me to a chart of returning starters and a 12-0 regular season from a year ago when you know in your heart it's a fraud. And you just made me disparage Wisconsin when they are certainly one of the best 15 teams in the country. But there's no way they should be on anyone's list of a top 5 preseason team. I don't care who they have back.
I was about to ask how you mail a podcast, and I'm like, oh yeah, you just send them an email. Like, or are you asking physically mail them this podcast?
Take your phone, wrap your phone, put your phone in an envelope, and send it to Paul Crist and say, here, hit play at this point, right at this section. And I wrote a story about Paul Crist last year. I love Paul Crist.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be. Can't we be realistic?
Yes.
Can we be realistic? Yes. If Wisconsin had played Georgia or Alabama during the regular season last year, would they have been undefeated?
No.
No. Why do we have to pretend? Are we trying not to offend the Big Ten West? They've got to switch it. By the way, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's only going to get worse.
Population centers. Yeah, I guess so. Scott Frost is getting the walk-on program going to Nebraska again, though.
I know. Scott Frost. I mean, I think Nebraska, but also, by the way, Nebraska sucks. Oh, Nebraska's the other good program. Nebraska's supposed to be the other good program in that division.
Maybe Purdue.
They rallied themselves into oblivion last year. What was the Wisconsin-Purdue score last year? 17-13? Did Jeff Brohm almost beat the team that's currently ranked number 3 in the preseason rankings?
Yeah, we were at Nebraska, I think, when that game was going on. And let me pulling it up right now for you. Purdue's schedule from last season. Wisconsin 17, Purdue 9.
Wow. Congratulations, third best team in America.
Oh, yeah, we were watching that game. I was on the field in Nebraska watching the game on the video board.
And Purdue went 10-2 last year, right?
No, they won 7-6.
Oh, they did?
They did beat the mighty Khalil Tate in Arizona.
Oh, okay. So Purdue...
Arizona was so good, it has a new coach now.
Okay, so just save it. Just save it until somebody from the Big Ten West does something other than beat up the rest of the Big Ten West. And then we can come back and have this conversation on a future podcast, which will never happen. All right, questions. That wasn't okay. A question.
No, you just you saw that and you wanted to rant about it.
I saw we're going to do. I like when I see things.
If they were ranked 5, would you be as angry?
They can't be ranked ahead of Ohio State. Like, they cannot be ranked in the preseason ahead of Ohio State. Ahead of an Ohio State team that beat them with a quarterback who had a robot knee. And again, like, if you're pointing me toward, like, returning starters, go away. But that's the only thing you can be pointing me toward. If you're comparing Wisconsin, Wisconsin and Ohio State played, Ohio State won. Wisconsin's ranked ahead of Ohio State. What are you basing that off of? Put your returning starters in an envelope and mail them to Brian Ferentz, because I don't want to hear about it, and it's just an embarrassing evaluation of the Big Ten. If you have a current top 25, anyone out there who has this, who's made a preseason top 25, if the number one team from the Big Ten on your list is from the Big Ten West, set your list on fire and get a clue about college football.
Okay, let's catch up on a million questions I've answered the last 3 weeks. I like this one, and I'm just reading these in like the order I like them. No rhyme or reason to it, but this was an interesting question. Josh Curry says, or maybe it's Curie, it's one R. He said, if all the defensive backslash secondary guys since 2014 came out in the same draft, how would you have them ranked in order of best prospect? That list includes Bradley Roby, Duran Grant, Eli Apple, Von Bell, Marshawn Lattimore, Malik Hooker, Garyon Conley, and Denzel Ward.
Okay, can you list them again?
Sure.
Is my pen working? Okay, try it again.
Bradley Roby.
I'm going to put BR.
Duran Grant. Eli Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Von Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Mm-hmm.
Malik Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Garyon Conley.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel Ward.
Okay. Do you know what I realized like 2 days ago, by the way? The Browns traded Malik Hooker for Denzel Ward.
Oh, yeah.
Because the number 12 pick that they traded down and turned into the number 4 pick the next year, that they could have picked Deshaun Watson. Hugh Jackson has said the guy he wanted was Malik Hooker. And so if they would have kept that pick and not traded down, Watson is who went 12. Malik Hooker went 15, 3 picks later. If the Browns had made that pick, I think it's almost certain it would have been Malik Hooker. And then by not making that pick, they picked Peppers later in that round, and they got the number 4 pick, then picked Denzel Ward the next year. So are we assessing them that like corners get a little like are we assessing them like NFL draft guys?
Well, that's, I guess we have to set the parameters. He just said how would you rank them, and I don't know if like can we use the benefit of hindsight and like know what they've done so far? Because then
no, okay. I say no.
He said simply as best draft.
So what we thought of them coming out of Ohio State.
So if we evaluated them in the moment as a draft prospect entering the draft. That evaluation in order, taking into account, let's take into account their position. That in general, corners are valued higher than safeties in general.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's run down. I have my number one guy. For sure.
Yeah, I have my number one guy too.
Tim, does everybody have, know the list in their head?
I have it in front of me.
Okay. I have it in front of me too because I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. Okay. So who's your number one guy?
Marshawn Lattimore.
Who's your number one guy?
Lattimore.
He's my number one guy, too. And I'm not sure that it's close.
I started covering the team in 2014, so I didn't cover Bradley Roby. But I've seen all the other guys, and I would take Lattimore over all of them. And I don't, you covered Roby, and I would think it would be crazy to think you'd take him over Lattimore. Not crazy, but you wouldn't do it.
All right. Who's your number two, Tim?
Hooker.
Who's your number two, Landis?
Hooker.
Also my number two. Who's your number three, Bill?
Conley.
Who's your number three, Tim?
I think I'll take Conley.
My three is between two guys, and neither of them is Conley. I probably would say Denzel.
Okay. He's my four.
He's your four. Who's your four, Tim?
Same.
Okay, my four is Roby. No doubt about it. Who's your five, Tim?
Roby. In spite of what I thought of as 2013.
Who's your five?
I don't know. I want to say Apple again because like I didn't cover Bradley Roby, so yeah. I didn't like evaluate him as a draft prospect. But I did think Eli Apple was going to be good, and he hasn't been so far, but I'll say Apple.
Okay.
And then I would have Roby six.
I'm conflicted. I'm close on two guys. I'm going to go five Conley. My six is Von Bell.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Von Bell.
Tim, who's your six?
Von Bell.
Can I make Von Bell my five?
Yeah.
And make Apple my six?
Yep. Okay. So then my seven is Apple, and my eight is Grant. I'm assuming that's the same for you, Tim?
Yes.
And Bill, you have Grant and Roby left. You're kind of...
I would say Roby and then Grant.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I think that's interesting. Again, we just said, I mean, Denzel Ward is my three, and he's the four for you guys. He went higher than anybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the only guy on that list that was a top five pick. I mean, it's a ridiculous exercise because we're talking about Roby, first rounder, Grant, fourth rounder, Apple, number 10 overall, Bell, second rounder, Lattimore, number 11 overall, Hooker, 15 overall, Conley in the 20s, Ward, number 4 overall.
Conley was 28, right?
That there's that, and he dropped a little bit because of the off-field stuff. I think he might have been a top 20 pick otherwise. Mm-hmm. I think Lattimore is clearly number 1. I think the only way you get off Hooker at number 2 is if you are so valuing corner over safety that you can't put a safety second. And then you somehow allow yourself to put Conley or Ward or Roby over Hooker only based on positional value. But I think a lot of people, and I think us included, believe that Malik Hooker is a transformational safety.
Yeah, it was just, yeah. And he didn't play last year, he was hurt. But yeah, I thought, Greg Schiano compared him to Ed Reed, and I thought that wasn't crazy.
So it's like, if he's Ed Reed, then it's like, okay, well, yeah, I don't care if he's not a corner.
Right.
And I do think Denzel's right there. I mean, I thought Roby was going to be really good. Roby is another guy who's just like...
He's been good.
Fast, physical, good attitude, smart. Like, I like everything about Roby. I think Conley, to me, is actually just like a little bit of a step below that group of guys.
Really?
Like, a half step below, like... Then if Lattimore's one, and then I would put like Ward and Apple or Ward and Roby as corners, and then Conley after that. And then to me, Apple, I think Apple going 10 was just an absolute shock.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there was a reach by the Giants, and I think he's a guy who really probably should have gone in the 20s.
Still a first rounder, I think, but 10, yeah, 10 was shockingly high.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Great question.
Was a really good question. Brock Doctor. He says, have an obscure food-related question. He says, I grew up watching my dad eat squirrels, deer hearts, pig testicles, turkey necks, chicken gizzards, and chicken livers. We were not a nomadic forest-dwelling family. Is that normal food behavior? No.
Does he want us to... I thought he was going to say, rank in order which of those things... I was going to say, number one, pig testicles, obviously.
Yeah. No, I don't. I think he just wanted us to tell him that his dad is a weirdo.
Is his dad setting up challenges on... Did they set up challenges on the original Fear Factor episodes?
Maybe.
I respect someone who lives off the land because I have no ability to do so. I have a friend who can do that. Like, if there was a robot apocalypse and we were all on our own, I know, like, my friend who I would go, like, try to find so he could take care of me.
Ari?
Ari's mom?
Yeah.
So I respect somebody who can do that. Also, economical.
Yeah, it did make me want to ask you guys, what's the weirdest thing you've ever, is it eaten? Eaten?
Eaten.
Eaten. Eaten. What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? I had a kangaroo burger.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Did it have like a pouch on it?
No.
No. Probably raw koala.
Australian sushi.
I don't know. I'm a very, I mean, not surprising. Maybe like pesto sauce.
I had an apple once.
Yeah, Tim's is like asparagus. I think I had alligator.
I love alligator. Yeah,
you love alligator.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like as like calamari, like a breaded appetizer.
Yeah, when we were in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl, I might have had like blackened alligator every day we were there.
Really?
Yeah, I had it several times. Tim, what about you?
I don't think I have anything that exotic. I just have to say lamb.
Cute.
Yep. Cute and delicious.
I used to always get venison and veal mixed up. Which one was a deer and which one was like a baby?
Oh, yeah. Veal, yeah. Venison is deer and veal is like a calf they lock in the dark.
Yeah. Because like it would be like, oh, like you'd be somewhere really fancy and they'd be like, would you like the veal chop for $63? And I was like, why is this fancy restaurant serving deer? And it's veal. I'm confused by it. I would eat a baby cow. Would you eat all baby animals?
I've never had veal, but not because I'm morally opposed to it. I've just never had it.
Yeah.
But I think I'd probably try it. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you eat a baby animal, Tim?
Morally, no.
Morally? What's your... Okay. Now we have enough. At what age does it become morally appropriate to consume an animal?
How old do cows live for? Do we know that question off?
135 years.
I would think at least like...
I swear to God, if there is a person out there listening to this podcast who has already started Googling...
18 to 22 years.
How long do cows live for? If Tim Bielek said, how long do cows live for? And within 5 seconds you started Googling it, please tweet at us. We're going to send you a prize. I don't know what it is. No, we're not going to send you a prize. We don't have any money.
Also, here's something. The natural lifespan of cattle is 15 to 20 years. The typical age at which they are slaughtered is 18 months.
Wow.
That sounds like a good range. Like 1 to 2 years, like I'm okay with it. If they told me it's baby cow, I'm like, maybe.
If a cow was like sucking on a pacifier and wrapped up in a blanket, you would not eat it.
When it gets to the age where, like, it's equivalent to, like, a horse running a Kentucky Derby, if it's, like, 3 years old, then I got no problems. Just hand me the steak.
Yeah. Calves are usually slaughtered when they reach 18 to 20 weeks of age.
Really?
Yeah.
If you'd Google, what is the most delicious age of a cow? My favorite age of the cow is the most delicious age.
Yeah.
Okay. That got a little weird.
There were a lot of food questions, so sorry. Adam Gottmuller, I think is how you say it, says Chicago or New York style pizza.
Is this the fight question?
It might be.
Yeah, DeLillo responded and said New York Chicago style is trash. I don't want lasagna. Tim Jessberger said Chicago deep dish is a Tim Beck of pizzas. Doug DeLillo said Tim Beck is 150% DiGiorno pizza. DiGiorno said dot 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 dot. DeLillo said I said what I said. DiGiorno said clearly. DeLillo said see ya.
How does DiGiorno pizza know that being compared to Tim Beck is an insult?
They know. Everyone knows.
Wow.
DiGiorno knows everything.
They do. Who's like the serial name searcher? Was it Von Bell? Von Bell used to search his name, right?
Oh, yeah.
DiGiorno's a name searcher on Twitter.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Isaiah Prince is a name searcher, I think, sometimes, too. Yeah. There's a family at my daughter's school who has two sons named Isaiah and Prince.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Big Buckeye fans.
I saw him at school the other day, and I said, you're not a left tackle.
Yeah.
I started to cry.
I also, like, to answer this question, I don't think you can compare the two. I almost view them as different foods, but if you ask me which I would prefer New York style.
Tim?
I am going to make a lot of people on that Twitter stream hate me, Chicago, by a slim margin, because I feel like in Chicago you could pack a lot more flavor into it. Like, crust-wise, I think they're both very good. You guys have turned me on to New York crust, like the authentic New York style crust.
From New Jersey.
Yes. But Chicago, you get a nice, good crisp at times. I think Giordano's has a little bit of a crisp to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's solid enough where I don't have to eat it all with a fork. I can pick it up in one hand and eat it like a normal slice of pizza. But I just like how Chicago packs things in. Somewhat compared to lasagna, what's wrong with having lasagna that you can hold in one hand?
It's not pizza.
So I enjoy both a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a life-changing experience for me to have a Giordano's pizza come to a place 2 miles from my house. Because I started eating Chicago-style pizza when I went to college in the Chicago suburbs and ate it all the time. But then once I left there, it became a treat. It was like when you're in Chicago, every single time I'd ever gone to Chicago since then, I would eat that. I would look forward to it. I would stuff myself with it. And it was a treat. Whereas if I were in, you know, a place in America that had normal pizza, New York style pizza as opposed to, say, Columbus.
Yeah.
I could eat that literally every day and never get sick of it. I have come to find that having a Giordano's down the road, as much as I love Chicago style pizza, I would not want to eat Chicago style pizza every day. But I actually do think I could eat very good New York style pizza every day and not get, I've never gotten tired of it. And I've lived in places where I could, I'm not going to say I ate pizza. Would I say I ate pizza every meal? I wouldn't say that. Would I say I ate pizza every other meal? Yeah, I would say that. And I never got tired of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, I couldn't get tired of deep dish, but I think for me.
You could not get tired of it. What if you ate it three nights in a row?
Maybe. But I mean, it's a thing where I think you have to save it for special occasions.
Wait a whole firm, Tim.
But would you say the same thing about other pizza? That you would only save it for special occasions? Take out the price. Just take into only consideration your enjoyment of it. The eating of it. Would you say that about other pizza? Well, I wouldn't want to eat other pizza all the time. I only want to save it for special occasions.
No.
Okay.
Like, draft night was a Giordano's night. The NBA All-Star Weekend, which me and my fiance loves, it's around Valentine's Day. That's a deep dish
Man,
night.
You make the NBA All-Star Weekend a romantic affair.
She loves that. Basketball.
I'm jealous of that relationship.
Yeah. Let's do that. Let's have a party. Let's have a Buckeye Talk party at Tim's apartment.
Yep.
For NBA All-Star Weekend.
You have space for how many people listen to podcasts now? Like 10 million?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could all fit in my apartment.
8,000.
8,000.
If you like a subway ride.
Yeah.
Only DeLillo would show up.
So I do think that is my differentiation. I do truly love both. I would put both. If we're separating them into two categories, I would put both in like my top five favorite foods.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you, I could not get tired of a triangle cut, good New York style pizza. I could, if you told me I had to eat it every day, I wouldn't complain. If I had to eat Chicago style pizza every day, I'd be like, God, I'm kind of getting tired of this.
Okay. Football question from Christian Zylstra. If you could have one player or coach from another Big Ten team and place him at Ohio State for 2018, which one would you choose / who would make the biggest impact?
Ooh.
He sent this on May 8th, and I think I wrote down some stuff.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Going into the Fenster backpack.
The Feskin. I'm going to get a new one for the season because this one's broken.
Uh-oh. If Feskin Backpacks want to sponsor this podcast, let us know.
Like, I would love to see Rashawn Gary on a defensive line with Nick Bosa and Chase Young and Draymond Jones.
Would you play Gary inside?
I would play him inside, yeah. But I don't think, I would pick him for entertainment purposes. I don't think I'd pick him based on need. I looked at some of the Wisconsin offensive linemen.
Mm.
Michael Dieter at center. And Bo, I can't say his last name, Ben Schwal or something like that, as a guard, interior offensive lineman. Juwan Johnson, receiver from Penn State, who is a giant that Ohio State has some guys like similar in body type, but haven't really done it. Noah Fant, the tight end from Iowa, I thought would be good. But I think my answer, because he said player or coach, I think I would take Don Brown.
Instead of Greg Schiano?
Yeah.
Instead of Greg Schiano, or like you'd make Don Brown? Like instead of Larry Johnson? What's Don Brown's position?
Linebackers, I think.
Okay, I'm in.
Ha! Yeah. But yeah, it was mostly just...
Anything to replace a linebackers coach. Just kidding. Not kidding.
Like, Greg Schiano, I think, is a really good coach. We've talked about how good of a coach he is. I feel like Ohio State's defense can get, a little boring sometimes.
Hmm.
And, they're really good and they're solid. It doesn't matter. But, Don Brown does some interesting things. And I wouldn't mind Ohio State mixing it up a little bit on defense.
Very interesting answer.
You said player or coach?
It's player or coach, yeah. I know your answer is Jeff Brom.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't want to see this Ohio State offense with a guy
who's... Keep in mind, you're replacing Urban Meyer.
Yeah, you can't make Jeff Brom like your quarterback's coach. You have to keep them in the same position.
Oh.
So Tim Bielek, who said earlier in this podcast that there was a 91% chance that Michigan was beating Ohio State, would now fire Urban Meyer if Jeff Brom was available. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's what Tim Bielek said.
Oh, I didn't know it'd be the same position, but I kind of agree with Bill.
You want to demote Jeff Brom? Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Well, I do like the idea of Don Brown coaching this Ohio State defense because putting Don Brown's aggressive tendencies with this front four is just downright terrifying. And I could see, even though Ohio State's corners aren't exact, you've lost three first round cornerbacks in 2 years. I'd be interested in what they would look like in a continue an aggressive scheme aided by blitzes and all those things. Player-wise, I would want to take Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Good pick.
Because we've said it before, the receiving core seems like maybe outside of Austin Mack, just guys, and I want a dude. Yep. And DPJ is a dude.
Are we sure?
Well, he looks like a dude.
Well, Ohio State has a bunch of guys who look like a dude.
Ohio State wanted him to be a dude.
Yeah, they did want him.
I would take either him or Tariq Black, because I was a big Tariq Black fan early in the season before he got hurt. But Peoples-Jones could fit the role as I think, potentially number one receiver and be a punt returner. Although, I don't know if I want
to replace DeMario.
I know. That,
Tim, you would so have a, ruthless.
You would have a fun battle, I think. Well, we're living in fantasy land right now. So.
I mean, I'm not saying I agree with Tim Bielik saying that DeMario McCall should not be on this team, but I'm just telling you Tim Bielik said it.
And we haven't even gotten to my hottest of hot takes yet.
Keep in mind there are other teams in the Big Ten besides Michigan.
Okay, here is my question. Tim.
Yes.
Where did Donovan Peoples-Jones rank in the Big Ten in receiving yards last year?
Well, he was obviously very low because Michigan's quarterbacks were terrible, so 18?
I don't know where he ranked because he wasn't in the top 50.
In the Big Ten?
In the Big Ten. The Big Ten had 50 guys have at least 303 yards receiving. Look him up now. And I don't see Donovan Peoples-Jones on that list. He had fewer receiving yards than Benjamin Victor. So, like, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I think my answer, I'm just busting your chops, because I think my answer would be the best receiver in the Big Ten. I just don't know who that is. Like, people love DJ Moore in this draft. And I think I've talked about this before. It's always very hard for me to evaluate other Big Ten players in the NFL draft, because there's some guys I follow on Twitter who like loved DJ Moore. And I was like, DJ Moore? He played Ohio State and he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why do you love DJ Moore? And Ohio State screws up my evaluations of other Big Ten guys because they come and play Ohio State and they stink. So I don't know. Like, is Stanley Morgan Jr. still in the Big Ten?
Yeah, from Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was second in the Big Ten in receiving yards last year. But, like, Moore's gone. Deshaun Hamilton from Penn State is gone. Simi Cobbs Jr., who was fourth, is gone. Like, J.D. Spielman was fifth last year. But, like, I'm not so sure that DeMario McCall isn't J.D. Spielman if you gave him a chance. You know? Like, Paris Campbell, I think, can do what J.D. Spielman did. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's Juwan Johnson, like you said, from Penn State. He was seventh in the Big Ten in receiving yards last year, but I feel like that would get them over the top. And maybe, I think they're pretty good at tackle. I mean, I guess if you knew for sure there's like an all Big Ten tackle, I get it, but it's not like they're super, like, you know, we talked about like Thayer Munford left tackle, but I said that's not one of my five greatest concerns. So I think the center, like, that's a smart thing. Like, there's clearly center.
Well, Dieter started at center. I think he started at center, guard, and tackle. Like, he can play whatever.
And so, like, you know, if you want to throw, like, another monster defensive tackle in next to Draymond Jones with Chase Young and Nick Bosa, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know, like, who's the best linebacker in the Big Ten, but it's like...
Devin Bush, maybe?
Like, is he better than Baron Browning? Like, who are you going to take off the... Like, I mean, I'm not saying that Ohio State has the 22 best players in the Big Ten. I sound like a homer today, I realize.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just feeling the Buckeyes.
Yeah. Is there a great... I don't know who's great. It's easier to answer, like, in the middle of the season. You say, God, like, get Maurice Hurst on this team or get DJ Moore on this team. I'm not sure who the answer is. And, like, I would not take Dwayne Haskins off the field. I would not, before you saw what he could do, I would not take him off the field for any quarterback in the Big Ten. If you said you could have Shea Patterson or Brian Lewerke or Trace McSorley, I wouldn't take, no, we've seen that game here.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, another thing I'm starting to rant about, I've already seen a few of the stories, like, building up Trace McSorley this year by comparing him to Baker Mayfield, and I think we in the past have compared him to Baker Mayfield. Like, I get it.
Similar playing styles.
But come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really? No, are you serious? I mean, like, I love Trace McSorley, but come on, man. Like, that's not – I'm not starting the Trace McSorley Heisman campaign because – he kind of looks like Baker Mayfield. How many receiving yards did Donovan Peoples-Jones have last year?
Donovan Peoples-Jones, 16 catches, 219 yards.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't disagree with the sentiment. I'm just not sure who the other best players in the Big Ten are right now. And that's part of – there's nobody – like, what would you have said a year ago? A year ago, if somebody asked this question, what would you have said? I mean, I would have said Saquon Barkley. Like, I don't know. Like, Mike Weber was
– I mean, Saquon Barkley was the best player in the Big Ten, but I don't
like,
know.
Like, Mike Weber was fine the year before.
Yeah.
We didn't know what J.K. Dobbins was going to be.
Oh, at this time last year? Yeah,
if we had this question a year ago, going into 2017, it's like, well, we think this offense is going to be better. Put Saquon Barkley at running back and let's go.
Yeah.
So, I don't think there's a – I don't think there's a guy like that. Because I think if you asked – I mean, honestly, if you asked this question on the – on Spartan talk and Husker talk and Hawkeye talk and Boilermaker talk, and what would their answer be? I mean, I think their answer would be like, would there even be a second thought? Is there anybody out there who's like, no, we have two good defensive ends. We don't need Nick Bosa. Everybody would say Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
James, except Black Panther fans.
James Grega from 11 Warriors sent in a question. He said, is T.J. McConnell the greatest basketball player in the history of ever? The answer is yes.
How many T.J. McConnell shirts do you own?
I don't own any T.J. McConnell shirts, but I bought a shirt that T.J. McConnell owns.
Okay. Not, you didn't buy it like off his body. Right?
No, he's significantly smaller than I am.
But it's not like it has T.J. McConnell sweat on it.
But isn't it crazy, like, when Ohio State played Arizona in the NCAA tournament, the D'Angelo Russell year, and everyone was like, who is this little white dude who's locking up D'Angelo Russell? And it's like, oh, he's like a very serviceable point guard in the NBA.
Yeah, he's like a guy who's like a top seven player for the third best team in the East.
Yeah. Dave Fitzgerald wants to know if we have a favorite Tim May story. I don't have one other than the tweet he had the other day when he was standing next to a sign that said, this is May at the Indianapolis 500, and it was hilarious. But you've known Tim a long time, Doug. Do you have a favorite Tim May story?
There are many Tim May stories. This is and is it out of turn? I don't know. This wouldn't hold up in court. Is it out of turn to tell a story about a guy that's his story? I don't want to like give away like Tim May secrets if he doesn't want them given away.
No, but like, the best thing about Tim May is the stories that he tells you. So, yeah. So no, I think it's fine.
So Tim May, when he was a young man, I believe still a teenager, Tim May loves things that go fast.
Yeah.
He is a big car racing guy. He loves IndyCar. He loves, like, he watches overseas Grand Prix races at 3 o'clock in the morning. he loves that stuff. And he's like very interested in like high speed jets. Like he's like a big Chuck Yeager guy. Like he's very knowledgeable about that kind of thing. So Tim, as a young man took flying lessons. And so he was, I believe this was in Texas. Cause I always forget with Tim, if he went from Alabama, like he was born in Alabama and moved to Texas, or was born in Texas and moved to Alabama. I think it was Alabama that moved to Texas.
I think you're right.
So he was taking a flying lesson in like this little plane, and he said he got hit by a gust of wind, and the wind started to flip the plane over. And so rather than fight it, he went with it and just flipped the plane over.
Like barrel
rolled? And barrel rolled, did like a full 360 and just came back up upright and was like, holy. and I just envisioned like the young Tim May just like in that moment, just like going with it. Like, oh, hell, let's see what this does. And just like, and like saving his own life in the process of like, he didn't plunge to his death in a plane because he just went with it, baby. And of course he tells it a thousand times better than you could tell it.
He's
about
a great storyteller.
Him. But it is just, that is just, I love Young. Also, I would totally watch that show. Young Tim May.
Young Tim May, yeah.
Oh my God. Like the young, if young, like Young Sheldon's a hit, right? And that's set in Texas.
Yeah.
Next show is Young Tim May. Unbelievable.
Okay, I like this question from G. Nilly, football question.
G.
If Ryan Day potentially leaves after the 2018 season, will Urban stay committed to recruiting and developing pro-style quarterbacks, or is the current quarterback recruiting trend Day-specific? I don't... I probably have asked more than anyone on the beat about this stuff, I think. To Ryan Day, to Urban Meyer, and like they kind of don't answer it every time I ask. From what I understand about this particular recruiting class, like everyone they're recruiting at the moment, and really have recruited from the start, are quote-unquote pro-style passers. But I also think that that's a product of this recruiting class. There aren't a lot of highly rated dual threat guys. One of them, Sam Howell, they really liked, and he ended up committing to Florida State. He's from North Carolina, or South, one of the Carolinas. So I am inclined to think it's a trend, even if like this is the only option they have to recruit in this class as pro-style quarterbacks. But I do think that there has been a shift in Urban Meyer's mindset a little bit, which is why I think he picked Dwayne Haskins. I think there are a lot of reasons to pick Dwayne Haskins, but I think college football is sort of changing again. And I think you need the quarterback to be something more than just like sort of a dynamic athlete back there, which is Urban Meyer has had in the past and has had a lot of success with. And I think JT Barrett to some extent was that. But like with all the RPO stuff, and you see like the success that like Oklahoma's having with its offense, and how like the success even at the pro level it's happening with the Eagles and the Chiefs doing some of that stuff, I think you need a different kind of quarterback now. And Urban Meyer, I think, is starting to see that. And I'm a little surprised by that, but because I don't know if he's one to usually sort of go the direction that the trends might take you in college football, but I think at quarterback he's starting to do that. So even if Day leaves, I think he would find an offensive coordinator who thinks along the same lines as Day. I don't know, maybe there's probably not somebody from the Chip Kelly tree who that could be, unless Mark Helfrich wants to stop being on television. But I think that this is like the new direction of the Ohio State offense and the Ohio State quarterback position, regardless of if Ryan Day is here after this season.
And as we've talked about, and Urban has said many, many times, like Urban doesn't really do things just because an assistant wants to do something. He more gets an assistant who does the thing that Urban wants to do. So like when he brought Chris Ash here and he wanted to play press man coverage, Chris Ash left. They didn't change the defense. That became the Urban Meyer defense. So like Ryan Day leaving, I don't think, you know, when he brought in Tom Herman and they started going more up tempo, he got Tom Herman because Tom Herman knew up tempo. It wasn't that Tom Herman said, hey, let's go up tempo. And Urban said no. And Tom Herman convinced him. And then when Tom Herman left, they didn't want to do it anymore. Now they did it less because I think the other coordinators weren't as good at it as Herman was. But I agree with you. I don't think they would change. And here, let me ask this question. One of the things that we thought was so interesting, and I know we wrote about it and talked about it when Jim Harbaugh got hired, is the idea of what are proven to be two highly successful coaches.
Yep.
Harbaugh's a successful coach. Hasn't been quite as great at Michigan as people necessarily thought right away, but you can't argue that he's successful. And we thought they were successful at the quarterback position in very different ways. And that I know, talked about the world where Ohio State and Michigan are probably going to be recruiting against each other, although they haven't recruited against each other as much as maybe we thought they would.
They have not, yeah.
But not at quarterback, because if there was a big, strong arm pro style kid, that's who Jim Harbaugh would want. And if there was a great athlete who could run and throw and run the zone read, that's what Urban Meyer would want. And we kind of thought they'll never go head to head on quarterback because they want different things. I don't think that's true anymore, right? Like no, there so. Are now, I still don't think Urban still. I think demands a quarterback that can run and turn a bad play into a good play.
Yeah.
He would never go with the guy who's a statue and is just never going to run. But I'm like, so who is that? Well, that's Aaron Rodgers. That's Russell Wilson. That's Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
That's Baker Mayfield. That's
Deshaun Watson.
I mean, that's everybody. Like, there's not like that. I mean, so who isn't that anymore? I guess Tom Brady. But I mean, like everybody. Like, that's almost not – like, okay, Peyton Manning. Like, but that's not a distinction anymore to have to say, well, I wouldn't want a slow-footed guy who can't move.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's the modern quarterback. Even the modern pro-style throw-first quarterback, most of them are great athletes. So he doesn't have to have a caveat to that. So he can go get – if he's like this now, he can go recruit a, quote, pro-style kid knowing – that pro-style kid probably has the athleticism he demands to run when needed, and now he's going to have the arm that he has now decided he wants, and Harbaugh is going to be going after the same kid. So now
I think they might, in the end, still maybe not go against the exact same type of kid, because I do think mobility, or whatever you want to call it, I think it's important to Jim Harbaugh because they do a lot of stuff in the play-action game, but I think it's important in a different way to Urban. Like, even though Dwayne Haskins is the quarterback, like, designed quarterback runs aren't going away, there'll certainly be fewer of them, but it's still always going to be a part of his offense. He loves that play too much, and frankly, it's too effective to just erase it from your playbook because you don't have JT Barrett anymore. But, like, the quarterback run game is not a part of the Michigan playbook. So that's a consideration I don't think Jim Harbaugh has to make when he's recruiting a quarterback. And it still is for Urban, even if throwing ability, I think, has superseded that now and what they value when they're evaluating somebody.
But Jim Harbaugh would certainly recruit Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, he would recruit Dwayne Haskins. I bet he would probably recruit like Grant Gunnell and Graham Mertz, all the guys they're recruiting now. He didn't. Dwan Mathis is from Michigan and committed to Michigan State, and Michigan didn't recruit him. And I had a conversation with Dwan Mathis outside of Ohio Stadium last summer after Friday Night Lights, and he was angry that Michigan never recruited him. But I think he is also that style of quarterback that they would like.
Interesting. I'm fascinated by that stuff.
Yeah. Our main man, Cynical Negro, wants to know, what's the worst pizza chain?
Little Caesars.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Little Caesars is not great, but for $5, it's pretty good. I think Papa John's is the worst. Because Papa John's is just as pricey as the other places, but I think is gross. I would rather, much rather have like Pizza Hut or Domino's than Papa John's.
I feel like this question is making me do to Donato's what I previously did to Wisconsin. I don't want to disparage it, but I do.
Oh, yeah. Donato's
like,
is trash.
So it's like I just would anything, any pizza that doesn't have a crust and is cut in a square is just behind anybody that cuts it in a triangle and does have a crust. So if you ask me, do you want Donato's or Little Caesars or Papa John's, I would take Little Caesars and Papa John's all day over Donato's.
I might take Donato's over Papa John's.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you not buy a $5 Little Caesars pizza, Tim?
No.
You would not stop and get it?
No.
Never.
There's other things I could buy for food $5 that are better than Little Caesars pizza.
But the whole pizza could for feed $5.
You and your fiancé. You, I mean,
on
no
your
one,
romantic NBA All-Star Game weekend.
$5. $5 for both of you. You cannot do that. Now, I mean, what are you going to do? Like split a value meal from McDonald's?
There's a reason it's $5.
I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's terrible at all.
I don't think it's terrible. I think it's appropriately priced.
When it's hot and fresh.
Yeah, which it always is.
I actually think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think it's awful. But you're certainly entitled to your opinion, Tim. Second part of his question was, what do you wish you could change that would let you report on Ohio State better / easier? Open locker room?
I mean, like...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the and the thing that exists, I think, at some programs, because you've heard people talk about it, whether it's like Tim May and Rusty Miller, the former AP guy, just talking about back in the day when you just like went to practice, like they were the only two guys at practice. And then when you'd stand on the sideline, like with John Cooper or Earl Bruce, like during practice, talk to him, watch practice. And then like when practice was over, if you needed a guy, you'd go get a guy.
Yeah.
So whether it's open locker room or just the ability, and I know the ability does exist at some college programs right now that are far less covered than Ohio State, where you show up at practice and then you say to the SID, hey, can I get this guy? And you get him after practice. Or like they're walking off the practice field every day and you just grab the guy you want and you're allowed to just get anybody and just talk to them. And that's just the deal.
Yeah.
And so the hardest thing is that everything at Ohio State is done in group settings. And every now and then you can set up like a one-on-one if you're like you're kind of doing a thing. But just to like be able to walk over and like grab, you know, Michael Jordan and be like, hey, that play against Penn State last week, did you miss the block or was the assignment right? You know, yeah. Or hey, what, just that, which exists everywhere else, which you can do in the Browns locker room and you can do in the pregame for the Indians every day. And you can do – now, the Cavs are nuts because the Cavs are LeBron and it's a really cramped physical atmosphere, but also there's a million people there. But those beat writers do it all the time. The best beat writers on the Cavs, they're having like one-on-one off-to-the-side conversations all the time that you know, if you're trying to do that on a college beat, you're trying to like, you know, text a kid or like talk to a kid away from the thing, but it's not part of the thing. Just like be around, hang out, and just have one-on-one conversations as part of the normal interaction, which is kind of what coverage college sports thinks. But it's great, but I just – and I understand why it's not that way because they're kids.
Sure.
I get it.
Sure.
But I wish it could be
– I mean, some places – I don't know if anyone in the Power 5 football does it, but Michigan State – basketball is always what I think of. I think they have some open practices, and if they don't have open practices, they have open locker room after every game, which is nearly unheard of at that level of college.
Well, tell them, like, for instance, what we do, like, at a bowl game when there's open locker room and there has to be, or open locker room at a Big Ten championship,
yeah,
or, like, during the NCAA tournament or Big Ten tournament with basketball, just explain to the good people, like, what a wonderful thing that is.
It's great. We make a sometimes we do a draft. We had a draft, like, in the people were, like, laughing at us in a press box at the Fiesta Bowl against Clemson, because right before, like, it was the Fiesta Bowl, it was a playoff game, and before the game, we're, like, drafting who we're going to talk to in the locker room in case Ohio State lost, and, like, that was it, and you were not looking ahead to a championship, you're looking ahead to the next season.
In case they got shut out and blown off the field.
Yeah, in case they didn't score. But that's what we do. Like, we make a list of all the guys we wish we could have talked to all year, and we put them down. But then we also put down, like, I don't know, we talked to Nick Bosa a lot, but, like, if you wanted to ask Nick Bosa a very specific thing that you would not get a great answer to in a group setting, that's your opportunity to do it when he's in the locker room, and you have a decent chance of getting one-on-one. At the very least, it can be, like, three people talking to him instead of 33.
Right.
So that's what it is. It's a – you can ask all of the same questions in a group setting that you would in a one-on-one setting. You're just not going to get the same kind of answers most of the time. So that's what it is.
And it's twofold. One is – anytime it's one-on-one and you're having a conversation instead of it being a Q&A, it's better.
Yeah.
And two is, then everybody else doesn't get to hear your question and steal the answer.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's not, for instance, and there's little things you can find, but by the way, who was the number one pick in the Clemson Ohio State draft?
Oh, I don't remember.
What? I had the number one pick, I think.
Torrence Gibson?
Torrence Gibson.
Yeah, Torrence Gibson, yeah.
I picked Torrence Gibson number one. I sprinted to that dude in the locker room. I got like eight questions in, all on video. That post, it was like Ohio State just lost the playoff. I had a Torrence Gibson story up an hour after the game ended. They're like, crazy. But also, for instance, I remember when Ohio State played Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl.
The year before.
And Taylor Decker had the block on Jalen Smith that –
yeah.
Blew apart Jalen Smith's knee. And I talked to Taylor Decker about it after the game at one-on-one.
Yeah.
And I wrote a big story about what Taylor Decker said about that block. And I don't – maybe someone else went up and talked to him one-on-one too, but I didn't have to wait for a news conference. I didn't have to wait, oh, well, Taylor – it's not Taylor Decker's day to talk. I went up and talked, and that wasn't – but that was like I talked to Taylor Decker about that and got – he had good quotes about it and got a good story about an important thing.
Yeah.
By myself, and, which, like, never would have happened after a regular season game.
And in that game, too, like, that was, Joey Bosa got ejected for targeting. Was his last game ever at Ohio State. And I think under normal game situations, like, if we cover a regular season game at Ohio State or on the or Ohio Stadium or on the road, we can request guys. It's not guaranteed that we get them. They're usually pretty good about giving us what we ask for. But in that situation, Joey Bosa gets ejected. I don't think they would have brought him out to talk to us.
Right, because they have to they bring the players to us.
Or he would have just said, like,
room.
I don't want to do that.
Right.
But we were allowed in the locker room, so we just went up to him and talked to him. And he talked to him. He was fine. Like, I don't think he was angry about it. But I think under normal game circumstances, we wouldn't have been able to talk to Joey Bosa about getting ejected from his final game as a Buckeye.
Love open locker room.
It's the best. Similar kind of, not a similar question, but it's more about like.
Do you think people think that's interesting?
I don't know. I like, in my head, I'm like, oh, I would find that interesting, but it's also what I do for a living now. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
But like, I always thought it was interesting when I was younger because I thought I wanted to do this.
Yeah.
So it's like inside the profession I hope to be a part of. Do you think people think that's interesting, Tim? Like sort of the ins and outs of doing the job? Or did people just tune out for the last 4 minutes?
I think there's got to be an interest in it. I think there's always, you know, people want to peel behind the curtain and see what the meta is behind our job to really kind of be like, oh, so that's kind of how they do things. I'm sure there's some merit to it that people appreciate because, you know, the season when we're just grinding away, I'm sure people are like, you know, man, they got this, and this to do. That's a lot. And I'm fascinated by like how they get this, and this, and like do all these things.
Okay. Glad they like it. I will always remember after the 2006 national championship game when they got their doors blown off by Florida, being in a very crowded locker room and standing around Ted Ginn Jr. and saying, "You got hurt on the celebration?" Like when he got tackled on the end zone by Roy Hall, when like we all sort of didn't exactly know, like we thought that's what happened. And again, like if that had been a regular season game and like Ted Ginn didn't play the last, you know, 57 minutes, he probably wouldn't have been brought out because he was hurt. You're not talking to a hurt guy. And instead, we stood there and got an answer.
Greg Tyson asked which road game we're most looking forward to this upcoming season and why.
What are the road games? Let me pull it up.
At TCU in Dallas.
Okay.
at Penn State.
Okay.
At Michigan State.
Okay.
At Purdue.
Okay.
At Maryland.
Yeah, I think those are the
I
five.
I think that's it, the five.
Michigan State.
I said Michigan State.
Oh, you said Michigan State.
Okay. Yeah.
That's five.
I'm most looking forward to Purdue, which I know sounds weird. It's just like there's two stadiums in the Big Ten I haven't been to, and they're Purdue and Northwestern.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to going to Purdue, even though I've heard like West Lafayette is like nothing.
Careful. Yeah. Also, they have a big drum.
Oh, yeah. Drums are cool.
Because I remember, because you started in 14, in 2013, in our first year of like the Cleveland.com thing, I was there with Ari and Zach, and like I took a picture of Ari and Zach with the big drum.
Yeah.
I like the Penn State trip, mostly because I think Penn State's a great place to watch a game. And when Ohio State's the opponent, it's always like a big time thing. Dallas is great. Like, you know, like we've been to Dallas like a million times now. Yeah. Like I'm always more curious. I like on campus games.
I wish they were playing at TCU.
I wish they were like playing
originally
at TCU.
Intended.
Yeah. I mean, like I've enjoyed, the places I've been able to go, Washington and USC and Miami and Texas and Virginia Tech, and being able to see places like that. A neutral site game is just not as good. I mean, I understand why they do it some. I'm glad Ohio State is limiting it and that this is unusual for them rather than a matter of course. Because the whole point of any of this stuff, like how great, Oklahoma was great.
Awesome. Other than the weather.
But Oklahoma,
although the weather story was the most right thing I've ever written for Cleveland.com.
So, really?
Yeah. Like a million people read it.
So that's like, it's great to get to experience that and then to get the home fans to get to take a peek at these guys. Like that really is what it's all about.
Yeah. Virginia Tech was cool too.
But I think Penn State is just a great, like when Penn State's good and Ohio State's good, that is a legit place to watch a game.
Yeah. What about you, Tim?
I think in normal circumstances, I would say Penn State, but this year I'm going to say Maryland because I got family that's going to be moving down there. My brother graduated from the Naval Academy in 2004, so I'm hopeful I can get down a day early and kind of see it again, because I don't know how close College Park is to Annapolis exactly.
It's like 40 minutes.
40 minutes, okay.
I drove it last year.
You can probably walk it.
Yeah. Two years ago, Ohio State basketball opened at Navy the day before Ohio State football played at Maryland, and I did both games.
And I mean, I always thought Annapolis was a really cool town. I don't get to see my brother's family a lot because they've lived in England for the past few years, but they're moving out, I think, to the DMV area this coming summer. So I'm hopeful I get a chance to spend a day with them before that game.
Do you have nephews?
Yes, two of them.
Larry Johnson's going to recruit them.
Well, the older one actually plays soccer, so.
Don't tell Larry Johnson that.
Yep.
yeah, it's good. Yeah, I wish Ohio State played in England, speaking of England.
That'd be great. Sweet.
But the funny thing is about all this, and I think, I mean, I know this to be true. Like, Ohio State is the answer to a lot of people when you ask that question.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of places that the team is not accustomed to playing necessarily in front of, if it's another Big Ten school, doesn't play in front of a packed house all the time. And you know at Ohio Stadium is always going to be packed. I mean, the people, if you're a college sports fan at all, and you haven't experienced Script Ohio, like coming to Ohio Stadium to see Script Ohio is like a really big deal for people. So it's funny that, like, you know, we're thinking of things knowing, and we know that there's a lot of people that, for a lot of people, the chance to see a game at Ohio Stadium is the kind of thing that you would answer to a question like that.
Mike Moore said,
God, I sound like a homer today.
Yep. Well, here, you can sound like more of a homer with this question. Mike Moore asked, in honor of lifting the ban on betting, will Dobbins and Weber combine for more than 2,500 rushing yards this season?
We should ask the state of Ohio if we could set up some separate Ohio State props brought to you by Cleveland.com. I was thinking about that, like what if you get a job with like, I don't want to set the lines or whatever, but like they got to have people who work for that stuff now, right?
Yeah,
like, I think sports betting thing.
Yeah,
wonder if that pays well.
Would we be able to get a cut of that?
I don't know. Maybe you can gamble for free. 2,500.
Last year,
do some research.
Dobbins ran for 1403. Tim, do math. Dobbins ran for 1403, and Weber ran for 626.
1403.
So just over 2,000.
And 626 is
2,029.
And like the hard thing about that is like, well, the one thing whenever you're making a bet like with college sports, like, do you mean in the 12 game regular season, or like are you kind of betting on, well, if I think they'll like maybe they'll play 15 games and they have a better chance of getting there. Like, you could say, well, Weber missed some games due to injury, but then, for instance, that's why Dobbins ran for 181 yards against Indiana, is because Weber was hurt.
Yeah.
If Weber was healthy the whole time, his total would have gone up, but I think Dobbins would have come down as well. Like, I think if Weber ran for 100, if Weber had run for 1,000 last year, and this is last year's offense, but if Weber had run for 1,000, I don't think Dobbins would have run for 1,400.
No.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then maybe Dobbins. I don't know. Well,
Weber didn't play two games, right?
Yeah, but
he missed two, and like I think like in another game, like basically didn't carry the ball.
Like the first four games, he basically didn't do anything, right? Because didn't he like not play a little bit, not play or something?
Yeah.
So, but Dobbins in some of those games like went nuts, like was the workhorse.
Yeah.
So, but the thing you're doing is taking JT Barrett out of the equation. So JT Barrett ran for what
798.
So what's the total on? So the total of it's like 2,800 for the three of them.
It's 2,900.
So
we're almost 3,000.
You just round it up, brother. Keep rounding.
It's almost a million.
Almost five. So like okay, so if that tells you those three did almost 2,800, then should you think the two main tailbacks will get 2,500? Or are how much are you giving? You're taking some of the. That's the whole thing. The two things we're talking about, like what's the story of the preseason? Offensively, the two stories of the preseason are how the offense is going to change, like to the passing attack, and then trying to figure out the distribution, and how much of the and mostly distributing the JT Barrett rushing yards, and how much of those yards are you just handing to Dobbins and Weber, or how much are you putting into the throw game?
Yeah, I think they're going to do it. I think the more I think about Dobbins and Weber, and I think I probably think a little differently than you guys, Mike. I see a gap, but I don't think that gap is going to be reflected in the touches. I do think it's going to be pretty even. I think they're both going to rush for 1,000 yards. So I'm fairly confident saying they will combine to go over 2,500. I would say over, yeah.
So you don't think Dobbins is going to be Webbins?
Webbins.
Dobber. Dobber. You don't think Dobbins is going to be a Heisman candidate?
No.
Because if he's splitting with Mike Weber, he can't be.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. And I think like the quarterback is going to run like five or fewer times per game, most of the time.
Okay.
And now the thing that you have to factor in is like blowouts. So I don't know. Right. If you get to 15 games and that bounces out, I guess. But yeah, I think they're going to combine to go over 2,500.
If you go blowouts and all of a sudden, yeah, now you're having... Who's taking those carries? I guess Master Teague's going to get
Master Teague, Brian Sneed, DeMario, maybe.
DeMario, maybe. Tim, so let's... I guess we'll do it the whole season, because at the end of the year, you don't go back and say, oh, show me the stats for the regular season. You look at the whole stats.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you may as well operate under the assumption they'll play 14. And then if you get 15, you know, if you get 15, then all of a sudden you have a better chance to go over. I think 2,500, by the way, is like the... whose question was that?
Mike Moore?
That guy could work for the Ohio Gambling Commission because I think that's the line. I think if you're setting an over-under on combined Dobbins-Weber yards, I think it is exactly 2,500. So you're over.
I'm over.
Tim?
Part of me is I'm leaning towards under. I say that because I feel like as much as you know the quarterback run's going to be taken out of the equation, I think it's going to have to do with Dwayne Haskins' ability to throw the ball downfield more effectively, that if they get bigger leads early, they're going to be more inclined, I think, to take Dobbins and Weber out of the game and play guys like Teague and Sneed and give guys like DeMario more carries to kind of offset that. And you don't want to throw Dobbins and Weber on the second half when you're beating Rutgers 49-3. And then Haskins is thrown for like five touchdowns.
Here's the thing that I wonder about. Because Antonio Williams was a veteran guy as a third back. Now they're third running back, unless you're handing the ball off to McCall, which I am not necessarily anticipating.
Yeah.
Your third straight-up running back is a true freshman.
Yep.
So you don't owe that guy anything, for sure. Now, Dobbins went nuts as a true freshman. Mike Weber would have played as a true freshman, had an injury, and redshirted. I think if Antonio Williams was your third back, that actually might change things a little bit. Because let me ask you this. I still believe that Dobbins is going to get a somewhat significant bigger portion of the load. I think it's just going to be a situation where I just think he's a little bit better. And it's just like that's the best way to win is to give him more of a load. Mm-hmm. So I am anticipating, if you're anticipating something more like a split, I'm anticipating something more like 2/3, 1/3. So if that's the case, but Mike Weber came back to run the ball Can you give some keep Mike Weber happy carries to him late in the third quarter of a Rutgers game where you're up 49-3?
Yeah, I think so.
You are a little like may it's like the maybe the backup receivers are in, maybe the backup quarterback's even in. But it's like Mike Weber's here to play, man. And Mike Weber's like trying to show NFL people stuff. And like Mike Weber's not like Mike Weber already had a year of being hurt in 2017 and missed time. Like, let the man play. That I think it's possible Mike Weber might be in line. That if my inclination is maybe 1600 for Dobbins and 700 or 800 for Weber, maybe Mike Weber can get to 1,000 because like he sliced up some of these laps. Maybe he kills Tulane.
Yeah.
Mike Weber in a game that's over rips off a 71-yard run because they want to let Mike Weber play a little bit. And then all of a sudden Mike Weber gets 1,000 because he's taking carries that Antonio Williams might have had. Like,
yeah.
So my inclination is under.
But not much under.
Basically, based on what Tim said, like based on like the advanced throw game and that kind of stuff. But I guess in the end, I guess my answer is actually over sort of because of the keep Mike Weber happy carries, which Tony Alford says don't exist. And when I said, would you ever give guys carries to keep them happy? He punched me in the face.
Seth Shaner asked if Celtics coach Brad Stevens is a better linebackers coach than Phil Davis. Probably not. Maybe.
I'm sitting back waiting for Doug's answer.
I think yes. I mean, I think like what is like getting your guys, like relating to your guys, getting your guys to believe in you, getting your guys to go hard and listen and have an understanding of the game plan.
Yeah.
You don't think like you don't think Urban Meyer could have like handed Brad Stevens like here's what Oklahoma does, and Brad Stevens could have figured out like that's like make sure we cover him this way.
Yeah, probably. Like, he can teach himself football and then become a better coach because most of coaching is, like, connecting with your guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that Milwaukee Bucks coach, what's his name? Joe Flemmer or whatever.
Know. When I saw it wasn't Jason Kidd, I didn't know.
I'm not saying that guy is better than Bill Davis. I'm just saying that, like, the best coach in the NBA might be a better linebackers coach than Bill Davis. No offense to Bill Davis.
Greg Miller asks, when will you get the Schiano interview regarding the Tennessee head coaching job? He said he would tell his side of the story the quiet few weeks prior to football camp seems ideal, which is right now. Yeah, he's never going to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a good reminder to, like, say that to his face, like, every time we talk to him the rest of the time until he does it.
I mean, he might talk to, I don't know, like, Ivan Mazel about it, but he's not going to talk to us about it. I would be shocked if he talked to us about it.
Doesn't he like us?
No. I don't know if he likes anybody other than his family and his players.
That's true. That's all that matters.
And Ivan Mazel. How many more questions do you want to do?
I don't know. 18 minutes worth? I mean, if we're out, we're out. Are these old questions or are some of these this week?
I'm getting some from this week. Most of the ones we did in the beginning are old. Now I'm getting some from this week. And I'm trying to get like football ones. There's a lot of like funny questions that aren't football ones.
Can I say a thing real quick while you're looking at questions?
Yeah.
So my daughter went to an awards banquet the other night for Central Ohio, and it was at the Wendy's headquarters.
In Dublin.
Like, Wendy's was nice enough to host it. It was like a Better Business Bureau thing, and Wendy's hosted it in the banquet room at Wendy's headquarters, which I thought was kind of cool and, like, makes me want to, like, work at Wendy's. I will say that they had a Frosty machine for dessert, but guess if you went to an awards banquet where the meal was served at Wendy's headquarters, try to guess what the dinner food was.
Nugs?
Good guess. Tim, do you have a guess?
Chicken sandwiches.
So I would say, I thought there was like a 50-50 chance. One is like, maybe it's going to be like, you know, it's like chicken cordon bleu. Like, it's just like a banquet. Like, it's a nice banquet and they bring out your little food. There's like 20 kids there, so it wasn't like, it was like probably 100 people total with teachers and parents and stuff. Or you just go hardcore. So it's a Wendy's buffet or something, right? Like, they put out burger patties, maybe you make your own thing or whatever. Taco bar.
What? I think some Wendy's have taco bars.
I remember back in the day, my hometown Wendy's had a taco bar.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if it's perhaps an indication that maybe the taco bar at Wendy's is coming back, Or is it just like, just feed this people something cheap? Like, and it was just...
They might have fed you, like, they said, all right, we're scrapping a taco bar. Let's bring all the taco bar supplies back to Dublin. And then just, like, dumped it on you.
Yeah.
So you were eating 9-year-old taco bar.
So I'm not complaining about a free meal. I just, of all the things, it's like, taco bar. I was, and I, did I eat, like, my weight in taco meat? Of course I did. But I just was surprised by it. I found it interesting.
Kyle Brandenburg, inventor of the fart, said...
He's going to put that in his Twitter bio.
Do you think JT Barrett would trade all of his awards and records for a spot on an NFL roster?
That's Buckeye talk. We want to get into some JT NFL stuff because Tim's been writing about it. No... Because, like, I mean, like, would he, is this like a rub a magic lamp genie kind of thing? Like, he trades all his college stuff and becomes Tom Brady? Or is it like, you're just on the roster?
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean,
he said roster spot, so.
You've got a rub, that's a lot of genies to, like, make him the type of quarterback that would be worth giving up his college career.
Yeah.
So I would say no.
I would say no. He is, Ohio State fans probably don't think about him in this way, and I think with time, we'll come to do so, but like he is, like, I don't know, kind of an OSU legend, like, for all the records that he has.
And it's hard in the moment. He'll become more of a legend the farther we get away from his career.
Yeah, like, he's a guy who I think, like, when he's 50 and comes back to Ohio Stadium, who will, like, he'll be universally respected and I think remembered very fondly.
Yeah.
And I don't think he would trade that to guarantee himself just a spot on the roster.
Yeah, to, like, make the 53.
Yeah.
Like, for the Saints. So Tim did a Buckeye breakfast that went bonkers this week or last week?
It was Monday.
Monday, about JT Barrett and Saints camp. And then I looked, I found this, that Good Morning Football show on the NFL Network or something.
Yep.
Put up like a little 2-minute video, and like the headline of the video was, is JT Barrett the Saints' future at quarterback?
Whoa.
And so then the first guy went, and the first guy was like, well, he might be, but Taysom Hill from BYU, who they acquired last year. That's the guy nobody's talked about. And he talked about Taysom Hill for 40 seconds. And then they went to the second guy, and the second guy went like, man, JT Barrett, how long was he in college? Did he play for Woody Hayes? And it was like, I get it, old college guy jokes.
Yeah.
And like, nobody answered it. So you tricked me with your horrible headline because, of course, the actual answer is JT Barrett the future of the Saints quarterback position? That answer is a hard no. And like, whatever, dude. So like, you've lost my respect, Good Morning NFL, or whatever the heck you are, because is undrafted free agent guy who wasn't drafted the perfect replacement for a Hall of Famer? No, you idiots. Of course not. So yeah. Like, where do we stand on like the... And you and I had a conversation about this the other day. Like, where are you on the, like, JT Barrett is in camp, and at the moment, people are writing and saying nice things about him. OTAs, not really camp, OTAs.
People always write and say nice things about JT. I think I feel maybe a little more confident in that he'll do this for a few years than I did before the draft. I thought it was possible that JT goes through this, goes to a rookie mini camp, doesn't do all that well, and then just, like, can't catch on anywhere, even if it's, like, practice squad or whatever, which is, like, practice squad guys make money to play football. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do think, I don't know, I think maybe there's a little something to the idea of him sticking around. I agree with you, I don't think he's the future NFL quarterback for anybody, but I think he can be a backup. I think he can be, maybe even a number two guy that you're like, he's not... Not a number two in the sense that you would, like, feel super confident about him sustaining your season if your starter went down, but just a guy you can plug in and play and, like, kind of get through it and then go to next year. But I think, like, some of the things – we didn't see the whole practice, but I watched a little bit of the video that people were tweeting out of the Saints camp, and I don't know. He looked comfortable doing some stuff that I maybe wasn't so sure he'd look comfortable doing. I'm sure he wasn't that consistent the entire time. We saw the good stuff, but I think he might be able to hang around a little longer than I thought. Previously.
Props to Bill Landis, who, by the way, in our pre-draft predictions, predicted that JT Barrett would be drafted in the 7th round by the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
So you were the only one of us that said he'd be drafted, so you were wrong, and Tim and I were right. But your theory was actually right on, because like you sort of explained then why you thought he'd be good for the Saints, and then the Saints signed him.
Yeah, so. Like came over the top on the Colts.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tim, what are you making of JT Barrett's success so far in Saints camp?
You know, he's a guy that I think we all thought was going to impress coaches, you know, because he's a quarterback coaches I think will feel good about in terms of safety, that he's going to do all the safe things, you know, he's going to protect the football. He's not going to make mistakes. He's not going to wow you, but he's also not going to make like head scratching mistakes or something like that. You know what you're getting, and you know you're getting a guy who you could trust as a smart presence in the room. But ultimately, I said it in the draft video, low ceiling is going to be what keeps them from having any sort of consistent NFL future. So I think he's got a decent shot to make the Saints. He's obviously just got to beat Taysom Hill, I think, to get it. But as far as productive playing time, what you were saying about the Good Morning Football guys, I think they're off base.
Tom Savage is there. I mean, there are other guys there. We talked about this, Bill. I think JT Barrett's the kind of guy who, when he shows up and you've never been around him before, he impresses you because he does all the things right off the field you're supposed to do. And I think he can look good thrown against air. And I think my bet would be that when he gets in, like if he gets to the point where he's playing in exhibition games, he's not going to look like an NFL quarterback. And I don't know what's going to happen to him.
He did. Like, he's not trying out for the Saints, or he signed a contract, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But like,
I mean, that doesn't mean he won't get cut. But
no. Yeah. It's just like, are the Saints in the end going to carry him as one of their three?
Yeah.
During the season, because they feel like if they get really crunched, he could play quarterback for them. This happened at the Senior Bowl. Like, he looks good. He didn't get invited to the Senior Bowl, yeah. And he didn't get drafted. So, like, let's remember that. And it's not. And it's again. This whole podcast, I've ended up disparaging things because people are elevating things higher than they should be elevated. JT Barrett is a great quarterback. He didn't get invited to the Senior Bowl. That took eight quarterbacks, six or eight, eight.
I think it was six. They took a kid from Richmond over JT Barrett.
Is that the LaLetta kid?
Yeah.
Everybody loves him. Six quarterbacks, and they didn't take him. He went to the East-West Shrine Game. Like, again, this to me sounds like exactly what happened at the East-West Shrine Game, which is like he got to the East-West Shrine Game, and everybody wrote these stories about, everybody loves JT Barrett. Look at this great throw in practice, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think in the end he can play quarterback in the NFL. So I think if you're going to end up keeping him on a roster, you're making a decision that we're keeping a guy that we don't think can ever play. And so he's going to be our third quarterback. But if we actually would ever get in a position where the first two got hurt, we'd sign somebody else. But I don't know. But in the meantime, Good Morning NFL Football is like making up stupid questions. And people accuse us of like clickbait all the time. Like, you try to put interesting headlines on things. Don't put a headline on a thing that says, could JT Barrett replace a Hall of Famer? And your answers be about Taysom Hill and how JT Barrett was in college since Woody Hayes. It's a fraud of a question. And then you won't even give an answer. Here's your answer. No. He's not an NFL quarterback. Nobody thought so during the draft. And so why are we going to, like, pretend? I get it. I get the people down there writing stories about JT Barrett. He's a famous college guy. But just why do we have to pretend? Why do we have to like ignore reality and pretend with stuff like that? It's crap, and it bothers me because it's not fair to like it's not fair to you guys. Because now if you walk around, hey, did you hear NFL Morning Football? Happy people said I had a question about JT Barrett replacing Drew Brees. It's a lie.
Yeah. Hmm. You should go on Good Morning Football and just yell out the country in the morning.
Good morning.
Jordan Steele.
Love him.
How good does this offensive line have to be for Ohio State to compete for a national championship? Isn't it crucial for Haskins to not have to improvise with his feet since he's a true pocket passer? Does the O-line have to win up front for the running backs to be elite this season? I mean, to win a national title, they got to be really good. And I think there is, and it's an interesting point, I guess. I don't think... Dwayne, I think it's easy. Oversell is not the right word. I think people are maybe a little too panicked about Dwayne Haskins' running ability and mobility. I think he's a better runner and more mobile than people give him credit for, and I think you'll see that fairly early on. But he's still not as mobile and still not as good of a runner as JT Barrett, which puts more onus on the offensive line to be better pass protectors, which has been inconsistent, I guess. It was kind of bad, really bad, 2 years ago, and fine last year, but kind of inconsistent last year, and JT bailed him out. because it's what he does best. So I do think it's an interesting thing to watch and maybe an interesting thing to ask about with guys when you have a less mobile quarterback. Like, how does that change your approach to pass blocking? But I think largely, like, are any of us concerned about the offensive line? I'm not really. I'm intrigued by it because there are new faces, but I think, like, Isaiah Prince, Michael Jordan are solid. Whoever the other guard is will be solid. Center's interesting, and Thayer Munford's interesting, but I think they're going
to
be good.
And as much as Prince is not the left tackle, I'm not worried about him at right tackle.
Yeah.
Do you think they have to be great, Tim?
I would say so. I mean, you look at the competition, Alabama's always going to have pass rushers, even though they Theron Payne was a first-round draft pick. Clemson has an
NFL... There's a factory in Tuscaloosa that makes guys who look exactly like Theron Payne.
Yes, and Clemson has a defensive line that would be the defensive... that 10 NFL teams would trade their defensive line for yesterday.
Yeah,
in order to get
Georgia, that actually, like, the Clemson's defensive line this year is actually going to be the thing that Greg Schiano said about Ohio State's defensive line last year.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, and Georgia, I think even though Georgia's going to have guys, I think that empire is just beginning in Athens. And
I mean, so does Michigan too, and I think Penn State's defensive line is getting bigger, or not bigger, better. Michigan State's, I think, will be like, there's stuff in their own division too. I think their own conference they have to worry about too.
Yeah, so they have to be good. They don't have to be spectacular. They have to be good enough to where Dwayne Haskins isn't running for his life.
I mean, you have to. If we're talking national championship, then you have to be elite because you're going against elite defensive lines. Exactly. I think they can get there. I think it will be maybe kind of similar to 2014 when they were working in some new starters, and at the beginning it wasn't great.
Mm.
But by the end, they were the best offensive line in the country. I think that's out there for this offensive line.
I don't think they have to be great. Obviously, they have to be to a certain level, but I think there's enough things. And again, I think there are reasons to be excited about DeMario McCall and Paris Campbell at H and the short passing game and what they're going to offer you with the tailbacks. I maybe have too much confidence in Ryan Day's play calling ability, but I feel like Ryan Day, with the weapons they have with Weber, Dobbins, McCall, Campbell, and then some other receiver options, but I'm mostly talking about running and screens and short passes, right?
Yeah.
Getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands. I think they have multiple options there that Ryan Day, for instance, if they were getting run over all day, I don't think it would mean they would lose. I think they could scheme up some stuff to try to counter that. But if you want to have a deep passing game, which is, again, the thing we're only going to talk about a million times, that's not getting the ball out of your hands quick. So it's like you've got to have a little time to let Austin Mack or somebody get down the field. So I think if you want to have Dwayne Haskins do what he does best and make the throws that get you over the top as a national champion, of course he has to have some time. But I don't think you have to go into the season believing that, like, they need a clean pocket for 5 seconds on every play, because I think you could just flip it to Paris and see what happens.
Yep. Okay, last question. From Doug DeLillo, he wants to know, what is Tim Bielek's hottest hot take? He says, I need to hear it about anything. Let's hear it.
Okay. I heard a preview of this, and I'm very intrigued.
Okay. I admit this took me all night to figure it out, because I was wrestling, like, with what's a hot take. Everything from, like, you know, the size of chicken wings to my thoughts on film. But here we go. In this current decade, the fact that we don't have an NCAA football video game is one of the most understated travesties in sports.
That's not a hot take. I agree with
that. Let the man speak.
And I know
it's getting hot in here.
I know Ed O'Bannon was trying to do the right thing, helping getting players paid. But newsflash, they're never gonna get paid. I've accepted this reality a long time ago.
That's a hot take.
No matter what they do, they're never gonna get paid. Just accept it. Hmm. So why can't we get our video game?
My game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at a story from 2016 where Kirk Herbstreit just ripped Ed O'Bannon to shreds about this video game. Here's an exact quote from Herbstreit. This is written by Brian Whitey, who's a contributor to the Sporting News. I gotta find the exact quote. Herbstreit, I think he got this off an interview with SEC Country, but Herbstreit's like, quote, I've never met one player in college football that's like, they can't use my name and likeness. I need to be paid. They're just thrilled to be on the game. They love being on the game. It's like the biggest highlight of their life is to be on the game. And you can't tell me, like, for example, if you're Tate Martell, if he had a copy of NCAA Football 18, he wouldn't be like, man, oh man, you know, this video game is nice, but I'd really rather have money. Because if he's good, he's going to get paid in 3 years. Like, I'd rather, like, all that stuff. when he can play as himself in a video game. And growing up, Bill, you can probably answer this, since you've played video games, I'm assuming.
I still do. 30 years old.
I played Pong.
Pong's good, but was there anything that got you more excited about... when you get excited about college football, what's one thing you think about in the summer that got you hyped up about college football?
When the game came out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're 5 years removed from it. The game, we have new consoles where the game is not available that can be optimized for high definition, let alone 4K television, that doesn't include all the current concepts, all the current players, a playoff format, and all the other adjustments that happen with video games. By the way, I think Madden's terrible. That's my second video game hot take. I think Madden's terrible. I find it unplayable.
It's that different from the college thing? Madden's that different?
I think
they were always had very similar engines when they were both being made at the same time.
Yeah, I think they're different. They feel like very different games, and I just don't like the Madden franchise. I grew up on the NCAA franchise. I have like 4 or 5 different versions. The last one I have like NCAA 12, which I still play on my Xbox 360. It's the only game I still play on my old 360. And I'll pick it up from time to time because I want to play a football game. And 5 years removed, we don't have one. And I know there's an independent company out there that is making a new college football video game. It's not the same. Because these are made-up teams.
Yeah, it's kind of lame.
I mean, like Florida Tech or something like that.
I think that's where Nick Cannon went in Drumline.
Mm. Yeah, something like that. But, I mean, I credit to them. They're trying to bring something back. It'll never be the same until we get the game back. And they can find a way to bring it back. If you agree that, like, how many players graduate from an FBS team every year? 15 to 20? Mm-hmm. Multiply that by about 126. That's like...
130.
That's
almost
3,000. Games are sold for about $60. You take each game, multiply that by about $1 million, and that's not even including downloadable content where you could download all sorts of stuff in new games or whatever. There's special versions where you can get like extra perks in games. Take whatever that value is, $80-90 million, multiply it by 4 or 5, depending on how long the player is in college. Give the players a split of 1%. 1% of
the math.
3. That would be 3.5 million divided by about 3,000.
90 million divided by what?
Okay.
Okay.
So keep going.
The point is, you can give them a little share when they're graduated and they don't have eligibility. Whatever they would get out of that, I'm sure they would take. Because I'm sure it's not worth not having an NCAA video game for 5 years. None of the players that are in college now have ever been featured in an NCAA video game. And that is criminal to me.
Last one was in 2014.
Yeah, and I think Denard Robinson was on the cover, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so I'm going to evaluate that take. I thought it started out not that hot.
Yeah, it got hot.
And then it got really hot.
Yeah.
It got really hot at the part when you said, like, what would they rather have, a video game or money? And then you started talking about how, like, they're never going to get paid. That was very hot. But then in the end, you kind of came around on the, like, because you started off basically saying they shouldn't be worried about getting paid. Let's just have the video game. But then in the end, you came around on why don't they just pay them? Well, which actually is the argument. So I think your take splintered a little bit at the end, because is your take truly that like Ed O'Bannon shouldn't be fighting this fight because shut up and let us have a video game? Or is your take like the NCAA and EA Sports should just frickin' pay them so we can have a video game?
I mean, pay them after they graduate, because after they graduate, they're not college players
but
anymore.
But you started off yelling at Ed O'Bannon.
Yeah, because what did it do? Nothing. We're in the same spot.
But he's fighting to get money. I think if they said we'll pay them all after they graduate, Ed O'Bannon might have been okay with that, right?
Yeah. And where are we at like 4 years later? We're in the same spot we were 4 years later. This lawsuit has done nothing but take away a video game franchise. These players aren't getting paid. I don't think they're ever going to get paid. And this was just a waste of time that has cost millions of people the right to play a popular video game franchise. And I find it upsetting.
I thought your hottest take was that Madden isn't good, because Madden is good and you're wrong. Also, you know who did, or who did get paid because of the existence of the NCAA football game? Kirk Herbstreit, because he was one of the voices in the game. So, of course, he thinks he should still make it.
I also think, in the end, that probably was a pretty good hot take. That was pretty hot, because I think in the end, I disagreed with every part of it, and I want to get in like a screaming match with you right now.
Yeah.
Which means it's a good hot take.
Yeah.
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 Although it took me a long time to come up to it, because my fiance agreed that, like, I just don't have many hot, sizzling opinions. So thank you, DeLillo, for pushing me into a dark, dark place.
And here is the result of that hot take is, if you disagree with Tim's hot take, tweet him at Tim Bielek, T-I-M-B-I-E-L-I-K, and tell him what you disagree with about his hot take, so that you can experience the fallout of a take that hot, which is part of the hot take experience, is it not?
Yeah.
No, you can't just take into a vacuum.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Or if you've played the video game, tweet at me and tell me what's the latest what editions you have and what systems you have them on. Because I'm curious to know how many of these listeners would love to have the video game back.
If you think that people should just shut the hell up and sacrifice their teenage brains so that Tim can play a video game, tweet at him and agree with him.
Me and like 20 million people, though. I think 20... If they get money at the end when they're no longer...
Okay, no, yep, your take is locked in the vault. The take is in. We rack it. Is that what Jim Rome say? Rack him. Rack him. I'm on... What, how does Jim Rome sound? Jim Rome, is he even on the air anymore?
Yeah, he's on like CBS, I think.
He's probably on like some random podcast or something.
4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. All right, we're going to rack that, and we're going to rack this episode of Buckeye Talk. Thanks to you guys for listening. Drop those fart reviews. I don't know.
Send farts our way.
I just, like, I feel like it's completely appropriate, but also I just don't know if it's going to stick. I just don't know if it's going to linger. Yep. At Bill Landis.
Now you're getting the spirit.
Yeah. At Bill Landis 25, at Tim Bielek, at Doug Lamarise. Read our stories at cleveland.com/OSU. Takes by the Lake. Listen to my other podcasts. Subscribe to that separately, wherever you subscribe to find podcasts. We know you guys are subscribed to Buckeye Talk. Make sure you never miss a Buckeye Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on TuneIn. And if for some reason you use a podcast platform that like doesn't have Buckeye Talk on it, let us know. We'll try to figure it out. Maybe we'll take another shot at Spotify someday. I don't know. To be fair, we just continue to grow.
I think there probably is a threshold for listeners, but we seem to be gaining listeners. So.
Yeah. So, we'll keep doing it. We all have vacations coming up, our plan is to do one every week and have one up every Wednesday. Like, maybe there's a Wednesday where it doesn't happen, but we'll do our best to try to avoid that. Maybe pre-tape and do something special, or I don't know what. So we'll see. So anyway, thanks to all your great questions. We didn't get to every single one, but we were glad to get through a lot of them. You guys, like, we're looking for topics and stuff to talk about, so keep those questions coming. You can always tweet us. The best way to get us to get your question on is to tweet at Buckeye Talk Pod. Mm-hmm. Or on Tuesday or Wednesday, when one of the three of us puts out the call on Twitter, respond to that. But if you just want to send one during the week, tweet it at Buckeye Talk Pod. I know someone asked, how do we decide who puts out the call?
Yeah, I saw that too. We don't. It's just random.
Yeah, which is the answer to that really is not that interesting.
Yeah. We fist fight.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's Bill. I'm Doug.
Hot take Timmy.
You know what? You didn't talk about poutine.
Oh, yeah.
Next week.
Next week, Tim will talk about eating poutine in Canada. We've had some poutine takes from Landis previously on this podcast. We have not had a poutine take from Bielek because Tim Bielek had never eaten poutine before.
And I also have I want to say shout out Smokes Poutinery. I apologize we didn't talk about you this week. We will next week. But I also tease into next week why America is doing desserts wrong. And I have an example from Canada that explains exactly why.
You're going to tell us a way that Canada is better than the United States next week?
Communist.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm a little worried.
Make your Twitter private, bro.
I'm a little worried that Tim is might be getting addicted to hot takes.
Yeah, we created a monster.
Yeah, thanks a lot, DeLillo. All right, he's Bill, he's Tim, I'm Doug, and that was Buckeye Talk.